The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
But did anything go through your head at that moment? Was that you saying, right?
That was me saying, this is the first time he touched the ball in the final, and thank God I did something half decent with it.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
OTB AM. With Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
All right, it's a Monday morning. You're very welcome along to OTB AM. It's Gerard Owen with you all the way through until 10 this morning. Let's be having you, all those people out there who think that, oh, you can't play good football and win. Why can't we just hoof the ball forward and bang it into the net off some big lad's head? Why can't we just do that? Why can't it be like it was in 2000 and whatever? Or the 80s? How did you feel watching Ireland play some good football at the weekend? A bit surprised, a bit shocked. And let's not get carried away. It wasn't great. But it was certainly relatively effective in the end. Give us your thoughts. 0879 180 180 is the WhatsApp number. Or, of course, you can grab us with a comment on the YouTube channel or get us at OffTheBallAM on Twitter. Owen, good morning to you.
Morning, Ger. How are you?
I'm okay.
Okay.
No, I'm dying. you may have to take over here. I am absolutely dead. I'm not going to mention this that much. Maybe just every day for the next year.
As you should.
Until everybody else also does a duathlon. But we did a duathlon yesterday with our good friends at Whoop. And I posted on Twitter last night that I was willing a flat tire on the cycle after about a quarter of the way in. I was on the bike. It felt like for an eternity. And I looked down and we had a GoPro. And I was like, there's only about 10 minutes gone here. This could be anywhere between 45 and 55 minutes is how long it's going to take me to do this 20K cycle. That can't be right. I've been on the bike for about 4 days. And at that point, I was like, the thought flickered across my, and I say flickered across my mind. I indulged the thought for a good kind of 2.5-3 minutes. So if I got off and like just let the air out of my tire and claimed that I'd had a flat tire, who would know the difference? Who's going to come along and go, Where's the bit of gravel or where's the glass that has flat? No one. Absolutely no one. And it took me so long to work out the process of how that might happen that I somehow got a second wind and then was like nearly halfway there. And once you're halfway there, it's like, well, I'm halfway there now, so I'm going to have to keep doing it. And then I didn't stop. I actually managed to make it the whole way through. I was the very last finisher. I was Paddy last of all of the people who went and did the duathlon in Nace. I was number 150, whatever it was. I was the very last finisher. And you know, like Eddie the Eagle or that Olympic runner who had to be helped by his father onto the track. Mm-hmm. Remember that? Or there was a swimmer who basically couldn't swim, who swam like the 50 metres in about 8.5 minutes. That's what it was. So like, you know, those stragglers who are running in the postman pad outfits in the London Marathon at like 7, they come in 7 hours later. That was essentially me, but the very nice people there, they were still cheering and then afterwards there's this weird surge of adrenaline all the way through to like 2:30 this morning before finally fall asleep. It was absolutely mad.
It's going to be a Saturday duathlon for you next time. I mean, we were just saying off air, like the amount of people who didn't make it to the start line, I presume, totally changes
who,
how you're going to
look
at it.
Who are you talking
about? Me and everybody else in Team OTB, as it turned out, because I was kind of like watching from the sidelines and I was like, I'm the only person here not doing it. But it turned out there was a lot of us who decided.
You feel free to name names, Owen. I've got all morning. You can
name
names.
I just thought it was
names.
The entire Team OTB who were doing this. But it was so just,
Nathan,
your, it was just Murphy, yourself and Tommy, really.
Nathan Murphy, as you're saying, didn't do it. Adrian Barry didn't do it. Yeah, we'll start at those two. And anybody else who feels like they need a mention can get in touch on Teams, lads, if you want to. So we're going to talk to Tommy, we're going to talk to Ashling a little bit later on. I remember as a kid watching like every bad Saturday morning and Saturday evening movie, no matter what it was. And there's one that kind of, I had two channels growing up, so you watched like literally, you kind of, I remember there was some kind of 1970s science fiction movie where there's a crash landing of a spacecraft and
it's called E.T.
One of the Americans, even before that, because it was on RT, we didn't get ET and RT until about the 90s. And I remember there was like a crashed astronaut climbing up what looks like a desert mountain. And the way that they're talking about how brain dead the guy is that they have this weird spider crawl across his hand, and it's kind of a see-through scorpion, but the size of a tarantula. So it's kind of huge with a stinger at the back, and your man eats it.
Okay.
He eats it. That's how deranged he is. I don't know if he actually edited or if we were supposed to think that he was like pretending edit, but I ate many spiders on the road yesterday. That's what it felt like. And then you come through the other side and you're like, wow, this is, even I can do it. So there's no excuse for anybody.
Congratulations. Got there in the end. It doesn't sound like it was a pretty headspace to be in during those times, but I presume you're all the better for it after the end.
Yeah, you are. You definitely get, you get not to be slagged for not finishing.
True. So what percentage of Ger Gilroy have we in studio? I know you've been getting your stats.
I'd say about 36%. Yeah. Sleep recovery was like 19% last night.
Oh, God.
Not good. Managed 3.5 hours sleep.
That's all right.
We'll be okay. Today is going to be okay.
You would have been better off going out on Saturday night, staying out until 7 or 8 o'clock on Sunday morning, and then trying to sleep last night.
I would have been better off just staying up really late last night. I went to bed and then got up and then, you know, when you do that, you get up from sleeping to watch TV to watch the American football last night. And anyway, Tom Brady's good at American football. That's what I know. Where are we going on?
Will we go to the performance rankings this morning?
Yeah, let's go to the performance rankings.
Let's do it.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on the second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAN's performance rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head. The performance was just lacked that intensity.
The good, the bad, the grand coming your way every Monday morning here on OTBAM as we reflect on what happened over the course of the weekend. Not easy to find a whole pile of negativity I found over the course of the weekend. Maybe it's just me. Maybe we're just in good spirits these days. Maybe the late year sunshine, the sort of Indian summer, the reopening of society means that actually the red will just be non-existent from time to time. So we are reaching here, I'm not going to lie, for the bads this week. As you can see, we're not reaching whatsoever. What am I talking about? In the red, first up this morning, Kenny's critics. Everybody who ever had anything bad to say about Stephen Kenny, you've been proven wrong. Your takes took one hell of a beating on Saturday night as the Republic of Ireland smashed the mighty Azerbaijan 3-0.
I read the headlines in the papers last week, Baku or bust, right?
You did.
So the opposite of bust is boom, as we know. It's even more boomer these days. So it's Baku or boom. So it's like give them the new contract now and be done with it, right?
I mean, that's what you're taking away from the coverage.
That was the tone. But now actually, I'm wrong. The Examiner is Kenny needs good November to convince FAI. It's this endless cycle of no. I didn't mean a good performance, which was convincing, where we played good football away from home. As Dan McDonald pointed out, what was his whatever way he phrased it? Would it be churlish or using out of context results or stats to boost your case? He was pointing out that we scored as many goals in this campaign as we did in the entire previous campaign with two games left to go. I mean, yeah,
it's really interesting because what we had for, I would say, a lot of the Stephen Kenny era so far was a series of decent performances in games, and the end product wasn't there. The result wasn't there. And I don't necessarily blame people for getting fed up with watching Ireland if the results aren't coming. I think on this show, maybe we were we had a heavy focus on the performances. I think it's fair to say over the last little while. So I don't think it's fair to then shift the goalposts if you were in the camp where you thought Kenny wasn't delivering, and to remain critical or to even kind of refocus your efforts on being critical after a good result, because that's what it was, and that was what was important, I guess, coming away from this window, that there was going to be positive results. And really, if you're going to pick a game, I mean, it had to be the Azerbaijan game that Ireland won between the two games in this window. Now, the thing is, I absolutely think it's fair enough to analyse more than just the result from Saturday night.
And here's the thing, we're not going to fall into the same idiotic approach that some people have fallen into when it has come to looking at what's happened, where you can take whatever small sequence of events, paint this grand picture and go, well, that's the pattern of behaviour that we've seen, when actually that's not the case. So the performance the other night was really, really bad after we scored. It was good up until we scored, and then it was bad after we scored. What's the reason for that? It'd be, when we will talk with Vinnie Perth a little bit later on about this, but it would be good to understand a bit more about that. Is it because we don't have enough craft in midfield? Is it because they're quite low on confidence and we're looking around going, Jesus, what do we do now? We've just scored early. That's not what, we've no experience of this in this system. And it almost felt a little bit like they were unsure about how to get back, because they played really well for the first 10 minutes where they were pressing high up, and the distance between the defenders and the midfielders was actually quite tight. But after that, the defenders dropped off, Azerbaijan started to create some chances, and it wasn't a great performance at that point. But then having a bit of quality in the field in Callum Robinson, who was unavailable for, Jesus, it's a real pity about the virus. Mm-hmm. It's a real pity the virus stole some caps from Callum. You get to see what difference it makes when you have most of your best players available to you.
And what's really interesting is that when you see how, especially the first goal, it was just such quality from Callum Robinson, something that we haven't seen from an Irish player in a while. Maybe those moments from Troy Parrott against the Andorra game give us a glimpse of what might be to come in that department. And I think we're getting to a stage now where we're like, we can definitely make do with what the Republic of Ireland have up front. It's just, it's not as bad as maybe we thought it was, or maybe as bad as it was a year ago, that there's a decent level of experience there in Robinson, who obviously comes with quality, and then younger players as well. And it just feels that the problem areas are fewer than they were a year ago. It just feels that in attack now, we actually have a little thing called depth. Maybe depth is too strong, because I think if you look at the performance of Daryl Horgan the other night, he's not been consistent. I think it's unfair to judge Horgan's international career on the basis of Saturday, because I think he's actually been good under Stephen Kenny, but he wasn't good on Saturday night. And he's probably who you have to include if you're going to get talking about depth. But you talk about someone like Ogbeni and how sensational he was coming off the bench in the couple of times you've seen him in the Ireland shirt this year. He is a guy that I would love to see start against Qatar the next day. You'd love to see himself and Callum Robinson either side of Adam Ida up front and see what happens. And then you're talking about pinning the hopes of your depth on the likes of Aaron Connolly and Troy Parrott. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with, you know, the pressure on those two players in particular not being the pressure to lead the line all the time and to be the starters and to score goals for Stephen Kenny over the course of the next year, 18 months. I'm okay with them being in the mix with those five attackers fighting for three spots up front. And for me, that's as deep as you can possibly be with Ireland in the context of the post-Robbie Keane era.
Yeah, I think as well that Horgan is an excellent sub to come on when the game's breaking up, when there's 25 minutes left to go and the defence is getting tired. And it's great that he got his opportunity the other night, but certainly you can see why the change was made at halftime, and there is strength in depth around that area. We still don't, and we still need some more midfielders.
Well, that's the issue,
you know. So and maybe Jason Knight being sick during the week, you know, it did look like when Knight and Ida were sick during the week, it was like, oh, here we go again, something's going wrong in the build up to the week. But actually we got out of that, and we didn't have Seamus Coleman on the trip. So finally we're actually getting to a position where enough players are available and they have experience in the system. The coaching is clearly working. Like in the post-match interview, where bizarrely he wasn't asked about the week that he'd had, Callum Robinson did speak about working in those pockets. This is something we're working on with the coaching ticket. It's like there was a clear sign of that. There's a sign that they're doing work on the training ground that is being effective on the field of play, which I don't think you can say about an Ireland team in a long time. Maybe all the way back to Trapattoni, where it was clear what he was doing was 4-4-2, ultra-defensive, and that manifested itself on the field of play. You could see exactly what that was. But certainly, since then, it doesn't feel like we've had a discernible style of play that the coaching ticket and the manager has influenced in the same way that this has. So I know loads of people out there still are like, oh, no, no. And it feels still a little bit ridiculous, but it feels like people still want Stephen Kenny to fail for whatever reason. And I don't understand that. I really don't understand that. There was a bunch of people who were like, this isn't good enough. We just won 3-0 away from home.
Yeah. Yeah, no, like,
where's that coming from?
It comes from, as I say, shifting your view from results mattering to all of a sudden the performance is the be-all and end-all, and people are saying, what if Callum Robinson doesn't score that screamer? What if the goalkeeper actually gets his arms to the ball, and then all of a sudden you're going into the second half nil all?
Oh, the penalty! He was really lucky. That the penalty? It was a complete foul. Your man's pulling Doherty's shirt. It's a foul.
That was a joke that even went to VAR, and Parrott should have had a penalty himself as well later on in the second half. And like, as I say, it's totally possible to accept that the performance needs to get better. And it is interesting how even within the Kenny era, things have evolved a little bit. It was a more direct display, it felt, on Saturday than maybe we're used to seeing. I think since Anthony Barry's come in, there has been a change. I think going to three at the back and going a little bit more direct when they need to. I mean, I still think that Bazunu has such quality, and I think there is qualities along the back five to play out from the back at times, but to mix it up is what all the good teams do, even teams who are generally used to playing out from the back. If you look at Manchester City, for example, you see Ederson ping the ball long from time to time, and I'm no way comparing Republic of Ireland to Manchester City, but that you need to be able to mix it up depending on the opposition, and I think that Ireland have been better at that over the last little while. The midfield question is the big one, and you have two players in there who on paper should be better than the conversation we're having. We're talking about it as a real problem area, and yet you have Jeff Hendrick and you have Josh Cullen in there, two players who are playing at a good level, in particular Hendrick, who scored a goal in the Premier League right before the international break. And maybe there is something in the system that is hanging the two midfielders out to dry. When you are playing five defenders and three attackers, the two men in the middle might look very much like the men in the middle and might look like they're in no man's land at times. At the same time, you do look at some of the other prospects coming through. I would have loved to have seen Jason Knight get minutes at the weekend. That wasn't obviously going to be possible. But even looking more towards the future, Gavin Kilkenny was excellent by all accounts against Luxembourg in the under-21s over the course of the weekend. Could there be a spike in Jason Malumbi's career over the next little while?
Yeah.
Those three players in particular are three that we'll keep an eye on over the next little while and hope that just one of them comes through. We need, I hate to make this comparison, but we need a Declan Rice. Like, that's the exact sort of midfielder that the Republic of Ireland need. And to be honest with you, you'd even take, this isn't probably going to go down well, but you'd even take a Glenn Whelan type player at this point. Just something steady, somebody to do the right thing, somebody who understands the link between the defence and the attacking midfield positions. I think that sort of steady metronome of a player is something that Ireland can really do at the moment.
Somebody who's going to play 300 Premier League games in central midfield. You know, I think we underestimate what Glenn Whelan achieved in his career.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And I'm not saying that would be the sort of player that would take Ireland to World Cups or anything like that. But I think right now that sort of steady presence in midfield could be so important because the attack is so exciting. And if you do see the attack that I mentioned earlier on that I'd like to see, which is Ogbeni and Robinson either side of Ida, you need a boring couple of players elsewhere in the team to allow that thing to thrive. But you look elsewhere around the squad, the front three that we mentioned, we've obviously spoken about the goalkeeper situation, and then all the way across that back five, there are now options. There is depth everywhere in that squad with the exception of midfield. And with that just comes a great sense of excitement. And there has been improvements throughout Stephen Kenny's reign. The final part of the jigsaw was just getting the results. Now, in fairness, I do think that November is important. I do think that the Luxembourg game is a massive opportunity. And I know Serbia only beat them 1-0 the other day, and Serbia are a hell of a lot better than the Republic of Ireland. But if Ireland can get a win in Luxembourg, I think that will... I think it's a no-brainer at that point that Stephen Kenny's going to be kept out for the 2024 campaign. I think even a draw might do it for him, depending on the result in that game and the Portugal game. But there is also the opportunity to go and win that game. And if you beat Luxembourg away from home in the last window of this campaign, I think Ireland go into 2022 in a really positive place. So I'm not willing to say we're good now and everything is fine. I still think November is important.
I don't think
important.
Anybody is saying we're good now and this is a finished... Like, I know, again, people talk about the amount of games that he's had, but how many games has he actually had where they haven't been completely ruined by COVID or whatever? So not many, but since the summer, there's been the camp in Andorra and another camp, and since then it's clear to say that performances have improved. The Azerbaijan home game wasn't a great performance, but we did create an endless amount of opportunities, and perhaps maybe if we'd had our first choice strikers and attack available for that, the result would have been completely different. It's a sliding doors moment, we don't know. But certainly now we're beginning to build up some evidence that things are going in the right direction, and for me, that's all I'm looking for. I'm looking for a coach who understands the football architecture in Ireland, who has a vision for what we're trying to achieve, who communicates that vision clearly, and who's working his nuts off. That's literally all we actually can ask for. And it's been a while since we've had that. So give us your view. 087-9180-180 is the WhatsApp number. Or, of course, you can leave a comment on the YouTube stream. 350. It was 276 appearances in the Premier League. That's just the Premier League, obviously, for Stoke that Glenn Whelan made.
Yeah, and like that sort of experience, you'd like to think that one of the three midfielders, the young midfielders that I mentioned there, will step up and get that experience over the next little while.
Bite your hand off for that now, wouldn't we? Oh. 276 for one of those guys to have that career, you'd be like, yeah, that's great.
But like you would like to think that Jeff Hendrick wouldn't be a million miles away from that. I know he's a different player, but at the same time,
the younger players coming through.
Sorry, yes, of course. Yeah, 100%. And I think that even to achieve that would suggest that they're a level above Whelan, given that the Premier League has gone up to a whole other level in the post-Whelan years. Like, what I find, like, as a kind of a rubber stamping so far of the Kenny era is almost some of the sounds that we've heard during the tough times, that it's all well and good the players coming out and saying everything was great, and Callum Robinson saying we worked on that in training during the week, and he's high on adrenaline after the game. And that's great. That is a really positive thing to hear. But for me, it was listening to Matt Doherty in the aftermath of the Portugal game and that particular window, the Azerbaijan draw at home, just really going to bat for the coaches. Because we've seen it so many times in dressing rooms at international level and at club level, where you can tell from what a player says in the media that things just aren't going well. And it's not necessarily throwing the coach under the bus, it's just not going to bat for the coach. But in fact, these Ireland players have gone to bat for the coaching staff, and it's not just Stephen Kenny over the last little while. The top coaching is what Matt Doherty has constantly referred to when it comes to this camp. And it's now that after they finally get their positive competitive result that you can look back and say, okay, that makes sense now, and that was a real thumbs up for what they're doing at the moment, because we can only judge so much.
We got the first team coach of the Champions League winners.
Yeah.
Like, this is as good as coaching gets. That's part of the coaching ticket. That's the other thing that didn't really make any sense to me. It's like, oh, we lost these Irish legends from the coaching ticket. Yeah, we did. And then we replaced them with literally the coach of the European champions. That would actually be an upgrade. Mm. There's no ifs, ands or buts about it. That's a clear upgrade. When Duffer left, he obviously had a good time at Celtic, but hasn't worked at senior football since. And was only there for a short time. We replaced him with the guy who's in charge of the first team coaching at the European Champions. That's like, there's no knock on Duffer yet. Maybe he makes it there. Maybe he doesn't. But that's an improvement.
Yeah, yeah. Like the thing is, you won't get a proper answer to that question. It's impossible to know exactly what the benefit is from each coach, but certainly Barry's CV is impressive and more impressive than many coaches that have worked with Ireland over the last little while. So it should lead to an uptick in fortunes, and it seems that it's led to a bit of change. Again, we don't know exactly what sparks change in the camp, but it seems like something that might have worked out okay in the end for Kenny.
All right, OTB AM is brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette, put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Also in the red this morning, a bit of uncertainty around this one.
Yeah, like as I say, I think we're reaching here. Munster being in the red would be like ridiculous, to be honest. I thought they were absolutely outstanding yesterday. It's just the Snyman news, which seems to be dominating things, I think, across the papers this morning. It is the big angle.
Significant is the word that was used. Oh God, don't tell me that's his knee, sighs Donal Lenihan.
Yeah, that's from his live commentary on TV yesterday, and it sounded like Donal Lenihan was going to cry when he saw Snyman hobbling off, and it was just a horrible sight. He seemed to think in commentary that it wasn't the knee that he had already injured. He might be right. I think it was very, very hard to tell, and I think either way, if it is a re-injury or if it is the other knee, it's just not good. A knee injury after coming back from one is just a terrible thing, and I mean, there have been positive stories on the injury front from an Irish province perspective over the last little while. I mean, Adam Byrne coming back to score tries after 22 months out was a phenomenal story at the weekend. You just hope that Snyman isn't going to have anywhere near that level on the sidelines in total now as a result of this, and hopefully it's not as bad. Like, the thing is, what happened with Snyman last year was he goes up for a line out in that first game against Leinster and then just misses the entire season. Hopefully this is not of that severity where you could have him back the opposite side of Christmas, and he builds up minutes maybe with those Champions Cup games from January, and is there come the business end of the season, because we've spoken about this over the course of the last week, or we speculated about this over the course of the last week, that Munster may have better depth than at any point over the last 10 years, which means they have a better chance of winning trophies than at any point over the last 10 years. This is where the depth comes into question. And this is where those lads have to step up and play extra minutes and really grind it out. And we're going to have to see newer faces. Like Thomas O'Hearn, for example, is going to be brought on earlier and earlier as the season goes on. It'll then be down to those guys to see, can they pull Munster through to the knockout stages of the two most important the two competitions. And if they can get there and then get Snyman back, I think that's as good as you can hope for from the situation.
Yeah, it's pretty grim. He is the... So there's an ad for the game against Connacht at the weekend in the Examiner as well, and he's the bigger of the three heads who are advertising it, has become, in his absence, a cult figure for the Munster fans, and clearly somebody who could have a significant impact on their ability to win trophies this year. So that has just, unfortunately, not worked out at the moment, and we wish him all the best. So we're obviously, Van Grant said he wouldn't speculate until after they got the scan results, but he did say it seemed significant, and having spoken to him in the dressing room, he's a very important squad player for us in terms of what he brings. Hopefully we get some good news, but it's difficult to say at this stage. After speaking to him in the changing room, I'm pretty worried about it. So even when he was trying not to comment, Van Grant couldn't help himself expressing the fears, and that is on the front of the Examiner this morning. So that is Munster. Obviously their performance was excellent, and there's an out-half controversy brewing. Not for Ireland, but for Munster. And does that automatically mean that it brews for Ireland as well? Or did Johnny Sexton's appearance early off the bench and the brilliance of that appearance suggest that he is playing as well as he's ever done? We'll talk about this with Alan Quinn a little bit later on. So what's next?
We'll go into the Amber next, and we're going to put heavyweight boxing into the Amber this week, the Grand. And I think it's quite obvious for people why it's in the Grand. Yes, what we had on Saturday night was one of the greatest sports events of the year. It's going to be hard to top it in terms of drama, in terms of pure athletic quality, and in terms of an incredible narrative going into this. Like, I mean, it felt like hyperbole going into it that Ali Frazier could be mentioned at all in the context of Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder. But once things start to develop, once you get through four rounds of this fight on Saturday night, you're like, holy shit, okay, it wasn't hyperbole to mention it. Of course, it's not going to be on that level when it comes to the historical analysis of boxing, but in terms of it being a standalone, incredible, breathtaking fight, that is exactly what we got on Saturday night. It is something where you almost look at it, and of course it's not going to be something that happens in the near future, but you just wonder if Wilder could maybe stay as a professional boxer for a little while. Same with Tyson Fury. You'd love to see him do it again. You'd love to see him go for a fourth. I mean, it rarely happens. I think maybe...
But why? We know it's going to win. We know what's going to happen, don't we?
Yeah, well, I would watch it again. I mean, I didn't know what was going to happen throughout Saturday night. I think that when Tyson Fury goes down twice in the one round, I think you have to start thinking that Deontay Wilder might actually be in with a shout of winning it. So I think that's as suspenseful as you might want it to be. Yes, of course, Fury will say that he won all three fights, and I think he's probably right on that. And he is the better fighter and the best heavyweight of his generation. But I still think these two guys bring the best out of themselves. Now, the reason why it's in the Amber, obviously, is the connections to Daniel Kinahan. And it just is so disappointing, more so in the aftermath of Saturday night, that we do have what was genuinely one of the best sporting events in recent times, just marred completely by this. As I say, the narrative is so important when it comes to this sport, and the build-up was non-existent, certainly in this country, it felt, for obvious reasons. And it's just so needless. It's like these two boxers are two of the greatest athletes of their generation. They have absolutely no need whatsoever to be involving themselves with any sort of negative publicity that will in any way damage the sporting event that we got on Saturday night. But unfortunately, that's the reality of what happened, and that's what we're dealing with. And it completely destroys the sport, which should be in an amazing place. This should be the next golden generation of heavyweight boxing. We complained long enough about the Klitschko's stranglehold on the sport. That is firmly in the rearview mirror now. Not only are we getting great boxers, we're getting incredible fights between these boxers. We're getting amazing moments, and I know it's not connected to Kinahan, but even the likes of Joshua and Usyk a couple of weeks ago, it's hard to disassociate the heavyweight boxing sphere in general from what we've learned over the last couple of years. So it just leaves a really sour aftertaste on what should be a brilliant weekend for the sport.
I have to say, I don't agree with you in that I don't think anybody actually cares. I think that the whole point about the whole point about all this stuff is, right, so I'm reading the BBC gossip page and it's Saudi Arabia will target four Man United players and the transfer window opens in January. Martial, Van de Beek, Eric Bailly, Jesse Lingard, and the Saudi Arabian flags are flying outside Newcastle. People don't care about this stuff. The front page of every single newspaper in England has Tyson Fury and the party that he had afterwards. Still, this is the day after the day after. And all of the, I don't have any of the actual English front pages with me this morning. The back page of The Guardian has that amazing picture of Wilder and the referee. The referee actually tries to catch him at one stage in that one. Is he on the front of the London Times? No, okay. So it's they've gone with Amal Clooney. And I don't know. I actually think no one cares about it. In the middle of the fourth round, when you were watching it, were you thinking, ooh, it's a real pity that this spectacle has been ruined for me? Or was it afterwards? And is it 48 hours afterwards?
It's kind of throughout, to be honest with you. Like, I mean, I wasn't necessarily overly excited for the fight, given what we know. I think it's a curiosity. I got up on Sunday morning and watched it back. Like, it is. No, like, the usual response to what you just asked there is no, it doesn't come into your head whatsoever. But I think the entire premise of enjoying a sporting event comes from your build up to it, your excitement beforehand, how much reading you've done beforehand, how many times you've rewatched the first and second fights, for example, and how much you've invested yourself in getting pumped for an amazing sports event. That's why we do this show. That's why we talk about sport, is because we love it and we're excited for everything that's coming up and the anticipation of what's to come. And that anticipation was bulldozed by the reality around the organisation of this fight. And with that then comes a smaller degree of enjoyment from the event itself.
Okay, I think that I think fair enough, and from your perspective, and I know a bunch of people feel that way, but the vast majority of sports fans, and the reason that people get involved in sport is that the reason that the people we're talking about here get involved in sport is so that everybody forgets about other things. And I would argue that the English papers don't really care about any of that kind of stuff. It was a small story around the Joshua fight. It disappeared, and sure, boxing's full of shady people. And ultimately, what's going to happen with the football? Big story this week, big story next week, big story perhaps the week after, and then the signings start to arrive and the football improves, and they all become part of the same massive global story. And ultimately, people stop caring, I think. That's why I would say heavyweight boxing is straight in the green, because what happened was the fight is all anybody's talking about. The fight was so spectacular. Fury is such an amazing, charismatic champion that everybody forgets about the horrible things Tyson Fury said. Now, he was going through some very significant mental health issues at the time. Perhaps that was the cause of what he was saying. Perhaps that revealed his true character. You get to make your own mind up about that if you want to do the reading. But the position he's in now as the greatest heavyweight of his generation, like, he begins to catapult himself into the conversation for one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. And then no one's talking about anything else.
Well, can I just be really cynical on that for a moment? And you compare the two situations that you mentioned there, the boxing scenario and the Newcastle United scenario. You're really cynical about it. Like, you can't make a signing as a boxer. Like, I mean, the Saudi Arabian money will be used to much greater effect in Newcastle. That connection, that murky connection, will be of huge benefit to Newcastle United. I would contend that the murky connections we've had in heavyweight boxing have been to no benefit to the sport whatsoever. That we still would have had two great fighters. Maybe the underbelly here is that this was promoted exceptionally and your man's a marketing genius. I severely doubt that. I would suspect that there would have been a very similar amount of eyeballs on this on Saturday night, regardless of who brokered the fight. And that is a different scenario to the Newcastle United thing. And yes, that's being totally cynical about the whole thing. But
yeah, maybe. Look, it's impossible for us to know until somebody writes the Athletic piece, brings us into the room. So if the Fury Joshua fight had happened, then I think your premise would have been clearly wrong. There was, like, everybody said that fight was happening when it was happening because it was made by a deal maker at the centre of that. And, like, maybe that was hyperbole, but again, why would you be? I don't know why you would make that stuff up. So I think it's all on a scale, and I don't know. Loads of people thought the fight was amazing. Like, that's the thing.
I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, and so the heavyweight boxing is actually in the green. Heavyweight boxing has recovered. I would argue that heavyweight boxing has completely recovered from the Klitschko era, and how it got there, people don't care about it. Not Mike Grimm out, loads of people. Other people are like, talk about the boxing. Mm. What are you doing here? Well, why do I have to worry about this stuff?
Yeah, and I mean, I can appreciate that view. And yeah, like it's interesting. I just think that maybe in the UK you do get a different appreciation of the connection that than here. There was a huge Irish angle to this story, it felt, and it wasn't on the back pages of the newspapers. So maybe there are just more people in Ireland who watched the fight on Saturday night who feel differently about it.
It's on all the back pages of the Irish papers today. The front page of the Irish Times sports section is, I'm the greatest heavyweight of my era, Fury basks in Wilder win. Back page of the Sun.
I mean throughout the last year and a half, and I mean the...
Has it not
been? I would say that there is still an ignorance regarding the connections to, boxing's connections to Kinahan in the UK compared to in Ireland, I would say. I think that's surely a fair enough comment, is it not?
What's the comment?
That there is more of a focus on Kinahan here than there will be in the UK.
Yeah.
People are just more familiar with the story.
It was a 2 week or a week and a half story when the fight was happening, but I think it'll all disappear again.
It probably will. And that's the reality of where we're at. But for me, it was kind of hard to disassociate the two. And the more amazing the fight got, the more you're disappointed, the more you're like, I really want this sport to be close to perfect. But then again, I'm sure there are plenty of people who will say it was never perfect. It's always had a murky history. It's always roamed into the grey area, to say the very least, down through the years.
We have two more quick ones to get through here.
Yeah, let's move on to the good. So we've got Ireland, which we've already touched on, but we need to talk about Katie McCabe before that, because Katie McCabe is a joke, quite frankly. Three goals in three WSL games. She only scores screamers at this point, scored in Arsenal's 3-0 win against Everton yesterday. To put it into context, she scored four goals in the league in all of last season. She's already one behind them, her own tally this season. She assisted from a corner as well yesterday. Just this brilliant performance. Arsenal with a 100% record in the league so far. Out in top now. They scored 19 goals, conceded 2 at this point, having won all 5 of their games. And in the middle of this, we have an Irish superstar, which is kind of cool. It's something that maybe we've bemoaned in the men's game for quite some time, the lack of a Roy Keane anymore. It's pretty class to have somebody the very top of the league who is an integral part of the team. And like, it was really interesting listening to her speak in the aftermath of the game yesterday when she was interviewed on Sky, I think it was, where she talks about Arsenal bringing in Stephanie Catley this season, who was due to play a little bit at left back. And I mean, we saw McCabe playing on the left of a three over the course of the last few weeks, but McCabe was back at left back yesterday, and I guess thriving from that position again. As I say, she scored a couple of screamers already this season, but there was even that goal against Manchester City where she beats the offside trap and races through and slams the ball to the back of the net. It seems that she scored goals from different positions all throughout this year and has gone to a whole other level as a result of the threat to her position and the threat to her place in the starting 11. And it's been absolutely phenomenal. Like, the Arsenal manager was talking about her versatility afterwards, saying that she's so versatile. She's played a little bit as an attacking midfielder for us as well this year. She's been brilliant when she's been doing that as well in all those positions, whether it's winger, full-back, attacking midfield. She will give you the pace, give you the dribbles with her left foot, and obviously her crosses and finishes. She can play in a lot of different positions. And then he goes on to say, what I like about Katie is that she can bring different things to the team depending on where you have her in the starting position. So as a coach, sometimes you can fit her into a position where you think it will fit the match picture. So I guess you could say there's an element of the utility player about her, but that would completely undervalue what she's done for Arsenal so far this season. They're flying, she's flying, and it's brilliant to see.
All right, what's next?
Ireland's in the green. I mean, yeah, any final thoughts on the Republic of Ireland and how amazing they were and how Baku went boom?
It's good to be talking about an Ireland performance where we scored 3 goals away from home. It happens pretty rarely, especially in a competitive fixture. I mean, what do people want? What do people want?
They want us to smash Qatar on tomorrow night.
How important is that game for you?
It is important. I think that...
It is a friendly. It's a friendly at home against Qatar. So why is it all of a sudden important?
Well, here's the thing. Like, there's been a criticism that has actually been written this morning that when Ireland have a good performance, they come home and then things go awry. And I think that's based off the 2-1 defeat to Portugal and then coming home and then falling flat against Azerbaijan. So people are like, oh.
The Luxembourg game, I think, as well.
The Luxembourg, obviously, as well. So maybe there's this thought out there that, oh, we can't get carried away with this win, because we all know what happens after a good performance away. They come home and they fall flat. So
competitive matches. Yeah.
Yeah, in competitive matches. So I don't know, like Qatar got beaten 3-0 by Portugal over the course of the weekend. To use a barometer of what Portugal do to a team for what we expect from Ireland, I think is a tad unfair, but maybe they could have beaten them by a bigger margin. Looking at the stats, I didn't see any of the game, but it looked like they had all the ball and plenty of chances to rack up 5 or 6 potentially. So I think the expectation would be to win, but it is, let's make no bones about the fact, Saturday was the game. Saturday was the game that would define this window.
Yeah.
And they won. And they won well. And they could have won by more. And it was a good performance. It wasn't a great performance. It was a good performance. And I think as a whole, that already puts a green tick beside this international window, regardless of what happens tomorrow night. Unless they get like hammered by Qatar.
Eamon Dunphy's quick take. Robinson's goal is one of the best I've ever seen for Ireland. We're all marvelling over Salah's weak foot a week earlier. Robinson's weak one isn't bad either. What bugs me is the fact that he's 26 and didn't win his first cap until 3 years ago, just when Martin O'Neill's tenure was coming to an end. He'd been scoring regularly for Preston in the Championship for more than a year before that. O'Neill was very fond of pointing out he didn't have the players. Maybe he just didn't open his eyes. What strikes me about Saturday and Stephen Kenny's tenure as manager is the relevance of Ernest Hemingway's definition of courage. Courage to Hemingway is grace under pressure. After Robinson's early goal, Ireland didn't back it up for quite a while. They looked nervy and it was understandable. When you go so long without a competitive win, there's bound to be pressure. I thought that was a fairly obvious explainer for the whole thing, is that there's a team very low on confidence and wins like this are important. So maybe in that context, you know, they're going to point back to a body of work that goes to the camp when they got the opportunity to be together for the Andorra game. They got a win, they scored some goals. Since then, performances have definitely been an upward curve. You could definitely point to the Azerbaijan home game and say, well, we didn't win that game. Considering the opposition, maybe we should have. But, you know, success is lumpy, as the phrase goes.
Yeah, I think if we're judging things so far, I think the Azerbaijan home game has to be the low point, doesn't it? Like, I think just in terms of the performance, like even the Luxembourg game, you kind of felt that there was enough play in that first half that Ireland possibly could have scored a goal and not been in that position where they get beaten. I think Azerbaijan at home was definitely the low point, and it feels that what they've done since then has been relatively positive. But just on that Hemingway quote and Dunphy, what he's saying there, like, are we going to compare this to past regimes as well, where maybe Ireland score and go back to their shell a little bit? Is there something a little bit deeper that happens here with Ireland teams?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe. It's 12 minutes past 8. That is this week's performance rankings.
OTBAN's performance rankings with Gillette.
Right. Tommy Rooney is with us to add a late bolter for the performance rankings, to complain, I think, essentially. Tommy, good morning to you. How are you?
Morning, lads. How are we doing? I'm okay, Gert. I'm okay.
I am complaining. We'll talk a bit more about that. What are you complaining about?
I just think that Meath football should have been in the red. And I'll get to that in a second. I know you guys have been kind of annoyed me at times over the last 2 years when I've spoken about Meade's position in the power rankings and where they should be.
Well,
I know that Paddy and Andy have put a ban on me mentioning Meade.
I was going to say, like, the great breakout hit of the entire year, almost ruined by your weekly fascination with bringing it all back to Meade.
Well, then, look, the Meade women's team came around and they looked after us this summer, so they brought us all Ireland glory. So we actually recorded our latest episode of the Football Pod last night. It's with Hannah Tyrrell. It's an incredible episode. It's coming your way tomorrow. I did derail the episode for about 10 minutes talking about the state of play in Meath football at the minute.
In fairness, this week it might be justified.
It was the whole county's plans were thrown into disarray last Wednesday night. In October, we had a county board meeting. Nothing too fancy there. There was a review held of Andy McIntyre's time in charge. Now, this review was done similarly to the hurling team previously in the summer. Of Nick Weir's time in charge, and it was meant to be done when McIntyre was given a 3-year term back in 2019. So he obviously took over the Meath team in 2016, and 2019 he was given another 3 years, subject to review at the end of each season, which is all fair. The Meath County Board had their review, and then afterwards they were asked to hold a vote, and the vote went 8-7 against McIntyre staying on next year. So basically now what's happening is that it's going to that's the executive held a vote on Wednesday, and on Tuesday night it's going to the clubs. So 59 Meath clubs and 16 other members of a mixture of the executive and other people around the board get the vote. So there's going to be 75 votes, and McEntee just needs to win. He needs to get one more vote to push him over the line and keep another year. Why this is so important, lads, is that it's October. Like, there's 7 or 8 counties that still haven't fulfilled managerial positions that have been open for the last 2 months. They're starting to be filled over the last week. Well, it's probably only about 5 left, actually. Meath's season ended in July. Now, if they'd had the review in July and this vote went against Andy McEntee, I'm not sure I would be complaining as much as I am right now. But it's an absolute joke that this has happened right now in Meath football. Just when it looks like we're getting things back on track. They've won 3 of the last 4 minor titles in Leinster. They won a minor All-Ireland. We've just appointed a general manager to manage the transition of our players from minor up to under-20s onto the senior team. Last year was a blow when we didn't get to Division 1 in Kildare Betis, and it looks like Kildare have their house in order now with their new management ticket. But we have seen incremental improvements in Meath over the last 3, 4, 5 years. There's a plan in place. Everything felt like McEntee was going to stay in charge for a 6th year. I wouldn't be surprised in any way if that 6th year was going to be his final year in charge. In ways, it possibly would have felt like the coming of the end of how far he's brought Meath over the last while, where he brought them from, a team that were languishing in around Division 3, up into a team that were challenging in back-to-back Leinster finals, where they didn't put on their best performances, but they were up against one of the greatest teams that we've ever seen. So, as a Meath fan, I've definitely seen progression over the last 5 or 6 years. And for now, on a whim, for it to be all thrown out the window, possibly, last Wednesday night, just because a couple of people felt like, ah, sure, maybe he's not the best manager at the minute.
And so,
in October.
Presumably they have a backup plan in case of emergency break glass.
I haven't heard. Not that I'm aware of. I got the sense there was nothing. Nobody in the mix.
Who would the potential replacements be?
I couldn't tell you. I have nobody in my brain who would be ready to take over the Meath County team at the minute. Nobody. Like, genuinely. There's some young managers doing good stuff and in and around the Meath Senior Championship at the minute, but none of them are ready to take over yet. None of them are there yet in their development. I can't get my head around how this could have happened in October. I can't see it happening. I can see it happening in some county boards. I can't see it happening in a lot of others. And look, I don't know. There was obviously a couple of flare-ups earlier in the year. There was the issue with Bernard Flynn back in July, where Flynn and his management ticket walked out after there was a row about availability of under 20 players. Now, I don't know how directly this had a problem with it or how much of an issue this had on things. I didn't really hear it when I was speaking to people, but that must have been a factor. It had to have been. And I don't think, whatever about Flynn and McEntee having a point of difference, whatever about Bernard Flynn walking away from the under 20 team and Andy McEntee possibly not letting players go, the county board didn't cover themselves in glory back then. There was no mediation done. Nothing was sorted out and it was allowed to blow up. Now that was embarrassing enough what happened to Meath football earlier this summer. And this is even more embarrassing that this has been allowed to happen in October of this year.
So there's a little bit of a disagreement within the county and that's been allowed to fester and it ultimately has resulted in it all coming to a head and the manager getting pushed. Is that a fair estimation? Because like you're right about the timing. I mean, do this earlier in the year, but I'm just trying to get my head around why now and just why this decision has actually been arrived at.
Can't get my head around it, Owen. Like, it just doesn't make sense why the county would do this to themselves with less than 2 months to go. Like, the championship, senior championship semi-finals are at the weekend. The intermediate and junior grade are well into it, like, nearly finished now at this stage. If any new management team was to come in, like, what are they going to be able to do over the next 6 weeks? Like, it's going to take a couple of weeks to appoint them, to figure them out. Like, the players are already on programs. You get the sense from talking to a couple of players in the county that they're fully behind the McEntee project continuing for another year. It's just the county shooting themselves in the foot if it's not rectified at the club vote on Tuesday night. And there is precedence here. The county executive voted out a manager in 2010. The clubs backed up the county executive. And then in 2012, the county executive, led by Barney Allen, voted to oust Seamus McEnany. But the clubs disagreed and McEnany stayed on for another year. So we have seen it before in Meath where the clubs have said, no, we're going to stick with our manager and we're going to stick with it. So it remains to be seen what happens on Tuesday night. I hope for Meath football that it is rectified because this will be sending us back 3 steps after the small steps that we've taken forward after the last 5 or 6 years. And the green shoots that we've seen in the county. Like the Meath women's team showed what can be done when a team is kept together and a bit of momentum gets behind them. The Meath minors in the 20s, is really good work happening at minor level. And we're seeing now with Barry Horgan being appointed that there is a chance for things to start going forward. But this is just going to send us backwards.
There's a lot of that going on at the moment. A willful clinging to the archaic nature of the form of democracy that there is in the GAA at the moment. And we see it with the latest circling of the wagons against Plan B, which is happening at the moment. So I don't know. Tell me what happens next. The clubs get the opportunity to vote. That's on Tuesday night. Do you expect the players to come out and issue a statement in advance of that to try and influence the clubs?
I don't know. It would be powerful if they did, because I think the players in Meath are very well respected at the minute. And I think it would say a lot if the players would come out and say, look, we're through our programmes at the minute. We're working with our coaching staff. There's plans in place. We've seen the growth and improvement over the last couple of years. And you have seen it. Like Paddy and Andy spoke about it last night after they kind of complained about me talking about Meath. But like they did speak about the improvements they've seen in Meath.
Yeah.
One of Andy's last games for Mayo was against Meath in 2019, and he was walking off the field with Mickey Newman, and he spoke to him about the improvements that they've made in terms of physicality, in terms of competitiveness. And that didn't exist in Meath football for so long. From 2007, we didn't play in Division 1 until Andy McAtee got us back there. Yes, they lost every game, but they were competitive and they were playing Division 1 counties. And we saw in the second half against Meath at Dublin this year that they did rattle them. Like, and if I was a Meath footballer, I'd be mad to get out again next year.
Yeah, okay. Well, fingers crossed. I'm fairly certain that the Kildare players didn't issue a statement in advance of the vote that did for Kieran McGeaney back in the day. But afterwards, when he was gone, they thought about going on strike and then ultimately they decided against it. They should have issued that statement in advance saying, by the way, clubs, we think this is really good and we're very close and we're united. So sometimes keeping the players seen but not heard, it's a very English patrician conservative way of dealing with young people who are supposed to be the inspiration behind the whole organisation. And so I'd like to hear from them. I think it would be a good idea for them. And I don't know, maybe there are some county board delegates who will say, oh, you can't be having the tail wagging the dog. But it'd be good to know who those people are so that then you can plan around them and work around them in future. Tommy,
yeah.
Anything else?
No, lads, just I'm hoping for my own sanity that this is rectified on Tuesday night, so we'll see what happens.
Well, we'll keep a close eye on it. 22 minutes past 8 this morning, Tommy, good stuff. It is, as I said, 22 minutes past 8 on Monday, the 11th of October. If you want to get in touch with us, 0879 180 180 is the WhatsApp number. Vinnie Perth is going to give us his tactical assessment of what happened between Ireland and Azerbaijan and what evolution he's seeing, what performance differences are leading to the fact that we're starting to score some goals. We'll speak with Alan Quinlan just before 9 o'clock as well. Try and get the latest on RG Snyman. And we're back with Monday Sports Pages next.
OTB AM.
Brian White asks, does Tommy speak about anything other than Meath? No, he doesn't. He doesn't. He is going to join us a little bit later on as we look back at the duathlon. Did I tell you? I haven't mentioned this yet this morning, have I?
No.
No. We did a duathlon yesterday.
Congratulations.
Oh, thanks very much. It was pretty tricky. My memory is a bit affected by it for whatever reason afterwards. I can't remember telling everybody about it, so I'm going to have to... It's like Memento. I'm going to have to do it every day just so that like it keeps cropping up in my feet. Oh, you did that thing. Okay, excellent. Here is what's on otbsports.com. We'll run you through the rest of the sports pages as well. The three foundations of the Connacht Way. Andy Friend in conversation with Joe Malloy yesterday on the show. You should subscribe to the OTB Rugby feed on your podcast app. Ideally, you do it on the OTB Sports app. Brendan Doyle talking about his mental health journey and his Winter Olympic hopes in the luge or the skeleton. He's a luger, not a skeleton.
Brendan Doyle.
Yeah.
He's skeleton.
Skeleton. Troy Parrott, Aaron Connolly don't fit in Ireland's current system. That's the debate that they had on the show yesterday as well. And the best fighter in the world, Furyland's knockout blow on Wilder in Vegas. And Kenny praised intelligent Robinson after securing his first competitive win. Give it to Hector, says Rob.
I mean, it'll be coach interesting. By all accounts.
It would be interesting to see what happens. People can talk about money all they want, but that Meath shambles is just the latest in a long line of examples as to how badly counties are run versus how Dublin is ran. Says Will, and Meath getting back on their high horse after a semi-OK championship in 2021. This is not the 90s. The norm will return with more hidings next year again. It was confirmed over the weekend that when Plan A and Plan B get rejected. We're back to the qualifiers, the old qualifiers. So,
oh, I actually missed that.
That's what's happening.
I obviously had my head in the sand when that story came up.
John Fogarty has that story in the
No Super 8s.
In the Examiner today. No Super 8s. Super 8s are done. Back page of the Daily Star. Blind faith. Duffy admits Kenny Wright to drop him. Another thing that Kenny was getting criticised for, oh, I dropped Shane Duffy, and Shane Duffy's like, yeah, it was the right call. And now Shane Duffy's back playing football. Does the man management involved any credit for that? No, nothing to do with you. No, unconnected. Just two more quick bits from Dunphy. Kenny has talked very well of the Ireland he loves and the team that he wants to represent it. Without doubt, he is the man to lead this new generation. It's time to end all the chatter about his future. The FAI should hand him a new contract this week and get it done and dusted. Kenny has a rotten look, but he's making progress and has an incredibly tight-knit squad behind him. One of the sticks that's beaten, that they use to beat Stephen Kenny, is the sponsorship thing, right? And it's like, if you were getting involved with the FAI, you don't know who the next manager is going to be as the main title sponsor. Wouldn't you be more likely if you were like, okay, so you're building around this new generation. That's my marketing campaign. It's going to be grassroots, new Ireland, new generation, and the stars of that campaign are pretty clear. You've got John Egan, you've got Bazunu, and then you can take whoever you want after that. Because there's always three players that they would push forward in these ads. And it's... there's a good combination of people who are available for that at this point, who would represent all the best parts about us. And you've got a manager who lives and works in Ireland. I think that's important. Who understands the football architecture, who is a product of that.
Look, there's a reason why sponsors aren't involved with the FAI, and it's because they felt that it was a poisonous association. The question in return to that now will be, do I want to be associated with this team? Do the public like this team? Most importantly, will people show up to watch this team? I think the answer to all those questions is yes. Of course the results are important as well, and success is important too. It's more visibility, of course it is. But the reason why sponsors haven't been there is because the public did not like the FAI. Do the public now like this team? I think we've seen time and time again that there is a huge amount of support out there for them.
Yeah, and in fairness, I think tickets are pretty cheap for the Qatar games. Hopefully there'll be a big crowd and there'll be lots of kids at it. Bruce set for 10 million payoff. Saudi Arabia boss Steve Bruce is expected to be sacked this week, but can expect a payoff close to 10 million.
Saudi Arabia boss. I love that Freudian slip.
It's not a Freudian slip.
Oh, it's literally written down there, is it?
No, that's what I'm... Duffy, everyone can see progression we're making. Munster despair as key man Snyman suffers another injury, and no stopping Colin Keane with the Meath pilot rewriting history at the Curry yesterday as a brace of winners made him the most successful jockey in a single Irish flat season. We're living through a golden age of Irish jockeys, a generation who have come after the superstar generation that really helped popularise National Hunt, but the flat jockeys at the moment are absolutely sensational as well. So no doubt we'll talk more about it on Friday and Friday Night Racing. Superhuman. This is a picture of Gavin Bazunu dressed as Superman because that's what Shane Duffy says he's like in training. And Return of the King. Tyson Fury could be set for a homecoming fight next year. Frank Warren reckons he'd sell out any football arena in England. Nash and Grab. Munster showing signs that they can catch Leinster, but Snyman injury mars success in Wales. And Kenny now faces the task of building M'Baku. So credit where it's due, but run of wins needed is what Richard Dunn says on his piece. Well, should probably bring you some taste of Richard Dunn as well, who obviously has been very critical of Kenny up to this point. Kenny merits kudos for Baku, but side will only progress with a string of victories now. The other thing is that they brought back McCool. Did you know this? Did you see this?
No.
So McCool is our
well-found friend.
Yeah, he's back. I didn't know he'd gone away, but now that you mention it, he hadn't been around, so apparently he's back.
And like was the Wolfhound called McCool in the legend?
No, Finn McCool.
Brutally murdered by McCool.
No, Cúchulainn.
Oh, it was Cúchulainn who killed him. Oh my God.
What's it for? It was Satanta.
It was Satanta.
Do you want to go back to the start?
Yeah, let's do it. Come on, tell me the story.
Satanta is like this child who wants to join the Fianna and is told, you're too much of a kid, you can't join this. Like, don't be ridiculous. That's like, you're about 5 years old. Mm-hmm. And he was like, no, I can do whatever. Screw you. Mm-hmm. And there's a big feast on.
Yes.
And it's Ulla is the guy who's having the feast. Mm-hmm. And he's like, get out, go on, screw, get out of here. And then Satanta kills the Hound of Ulla.
With the slitter.
Yeath. And then he's called Cúchulainn.
Ah, he morphs into Cúchulainn, of course. Yeah. How could I forget?
The Hound of Ulster.
How could I throw Fionn Mac Cúil into that sort of company?
Well, Fionn Mac Cúil was from the Nafina.
Yeah, but like, I mean, I'm not sure would he be able to knock out a Wolfhound in such spectacular fashion.
Fionn and the Nafina.
There you go.
We don't really know our myths and legends enough, do we?
I mean, we get taught it in first class and then that's it.
Richard Dunn is saying, so far I've been honest about what I've seen, and if I'm honest about Saturday night, it was a great result and a great performance, so you can only hope this is the start of a good run, and there are signs for the next campaign that we're moving forward. It's a step forward, but we're not there yet. That's fair enough, right? Mm. It seems like Richard Dunn is softening his line on the basis of the evidence he sees.
Yeah.
Which is all you want.
It's like, I mean, it's an extremely, maybe motive is too strong a word, but it kind of feels like that when you're talking about results versus performance, and you're watching your country getting beaten and you feel that that is not where you want your country to be. So like, there is going to be like changing views on this if the results continue to get better. I'd be shocked if there wasn't. I don't think that it's as entrenched as we maybe thought it was.
I should just counteract the Dunphy give him a new contract with. Stephen Kenny won't want this debate turning towards his contract and his future after such a high in Baku. I don't want to be negative after such a good night, but you don't offer someone a contract based on one game in a 17-game run away to a team ranked 117th in the world. So he's saying, cool the Jets. Front page of the Examiner, significant. That's the Johan van Graan assessment of the injury. Snyman fears is the back page of the Daily Mail this morning. Munster star's injury spoils emphatic win, and Colin collects at the Curragh, and Bruce on the brink in wake of Toon takeover. Duffy, time to push on. Keane sets record for Irish wins. They also have, that's the Herald, the Irish Sun. Tyam the greatest is Fury's Viva Bash Vegas. He went out and hung out with the DJ afterwards. Bazooperman, they've done exactly the same thing. They put him in Superman graphics. Fury Road Home. Hero Fury eyeing celebration fight in Manchester. Coronation Street. Did you get that?
Yeah, it's like another Irish legend, isn't it?
It is. And Coronation Street is in Manchester.
Incredible.
Bruce to cash in and tune out. Is it, I mean, for Steve Bruce, how has this worked out?
Outstandingly well. He would have got sacked under Mike Ashley anyway.
I thought that Steve Bruce was going to bring Newcastle to the brink of relegation last season, and maybe even before that.
And he didn't.
He didn't. I think his reputation has actually been enhanced. After Villa, it was like, oh my God, you play such bad football and so limited in the ambition, and it just doesn't, it's just like, come on, please. But actually, the dignity, the quiet dignity with which he has handled himself over the course of the madness at Newcastle has been, it's been pretty good, and he's going to walk away with 10 million quid.
It's not a bad result, is it? I think that sets him up nicely for the next one.
Shoots, he scores. The Irish Times, Snyman injury cast shadow over Munster's bright start. I think everyone can see the progression we're making. Duffy, and I'm the greatest heavyweight of my era. Fury basks in wilder wind. Did you want to talk about a piece in the Irish Independent today?
Yes. I'm just really interested. I'm kind of like addicted to feedback about the special congress in a couple of weeks, because it sometimes feels that the conversations we're having on the show are a little bit like an echo chamber. And it was great that we had Brian McAvoy on the show last week to actually stand over what he was saying in terms of being an opponent to Proposal B, and we haven't seen too many of those voices. Certainly if you just judge your opinion on what's being said and written in the media, you will think that Proposal B will pass with flying colours at Special Congress. We know that that is not the case, and in fact it's up against it. But we've seen another piece this morning. Martin Breteny in the Irish Independent has written his opposition to Proposal B. Again, it's great to see opposition being verbalised. I just disagree with the tone of the piece completely.
You're illogical, Owen. In the most far-reaching attempt at reform of the All-Ireland Football Championship in GAA history, a proposal to restrict entry to 10 counties will be discussed by Special Congress in 2 weeks' time. This is written in print. A proposal to restrict entry to 10 counties will be discussed by Special Congress in 2 weeks' time. That's written down, but it's just completely wrong. How are you restricting entry? Literally every county in the 32 counties who play in the league. Is it 32? It is London instead of...
Yeah.
Yeah. Kilkenny. Literally those 32 counties, 31 plus the entire city of London, will get the opportunity to play for Sam Maguire. It's baked in. In the most far-reaching attempt at reform of the All-Ireland Football Championship in GAA history, a proposal to restrict entry to 10 counties will be discussed by Special Congress in 2 weeks' time. Martin Breheny argues that it's illogical and suggests alternatives. It is definitely illogical to suggest that only 10 counties will be allowed to enter the competition. The competition starts when the ball gets thrown in the Division 4 game, because there is a pathway for all those teams in Division 4, if they have the greatest season of all time in recorded history, if they go on a Leicester run, they could actually win Sam Maguire. The notion that it's restricted is a red herring at best and disingenuous. And it just does not... you can't read Proposal B and say, oh, there's only 10 teams that get to play in the Championship. Every game's a Championship game. Every single game is a Championship game with an impact on your future as a county and your ability to win the competition, which is how all championships should be.
Yeah, like you say, it's either a red herring or disingenuous. Like, I wonder, maybe not in the case of Martin Breheny, but in the case of a lot of people, is there an option C here, which is people just do not understand or can't comprehend what this is? Like, the idea that 10 counties are going into the Championship, as you say, is false. It is wrong. Everybody enters the Championship. 10 counties qualify for the business end of the Championship. Everybody is in this Championship. And I just don't understand how that's been missed. There are so many different elements of this that people are just picking up the wrong way. Whether it's the bottom three counties in Division 1 not getting through to the knockout rounds. The idea that they're being excluded from the Championship seems to be something that's being... That is a genuine thought out there amongst GAA correspondents, actually, over the last little while. It's astonishing that there is just a lack of understanding for what this proposal is actually bringing to the table. There are a number of different things, and I know we're going to be getting on to our next piece in a little while, but like even Friday, I just kind of like went through the maths of the league, the National League, over the last little while, because one thing had been driving me mad last week in the opposition to Proposal B, and it's the constant questions about, yeah, well, you're going to have a Championship that involves dead rubbers. What about all the dead rubbers? That is like the constant drumbeat, especially from someone like Brian McAvoy. Again, I totally respect him from going on the record, yep, and voicing his concern, but that's been part of his drumbeat. There'll be dead rubbers in the Championship. And I'm like, I don't see it that way. Is there some way of actually quantifying this? So I looked at the last time we had a full league, which was 2020, in fairness. We got the league finished after COVID, and there were a total of 112 regulation games played that year. Four out of 112 games were dead rubbers.
I can't have four dead rubbers. You're giving me dead rubbers. You give me four dead rubbers. Who the hell do you think you are? Why should we have to put up with four dead rubbers, Owen?
But I don't mind that being mentioned. The problem I have with this is that this is being used as one of these central pillars.
Yeah.
These central pillars to bash Proposal B. This is not an aside. This is like the key driving force against it. There'll be too many dead rubbers. 3.6% of the games you see in regulation time will be dead rubbers. That doesn't even include the knockout games that we're going to see. Okay. The central point of Martin Breheny's piece is that only 10 teams will qualify for the Championship. That is wrong. Like the central pillars of the argument are wrong. That is what's most frustrating about this. It is beyond debate. I really want to see some strong arguments when this actually gets brought out, where it's like, you know what, actually that's a fair point, but we've got a whole pile of inaccuracy. And that's probably the best way you can put it from what I've seen over the last little while.
All right. Give us your view. 087-9180-180 is the WhatsApp number. You can leave a comment in the YouTube stream as well. It's 8:40 this morning. I'm delighted to say Vinnie Perth is with us to reflect on an Ireland 3-0 win. Vinnie, I don't even know how to frame this conversation. We've never had one before where Ireland have won 3-0 away from home in a competitive game. So how do we talk about this? It's like I don't know. We're not picking... We're obviously going to pick some holes in the performance, but I'm kind of speechless at this stage.
Yeah, listen, after Owen's rant there, it's good to hear another sport being given out about this morning, other than football and soccer in this country. It's great to hear that. That's great news for a football person.
Come here, what did you make of the performance, notwithstanding the result? Because we definitely don't want to fall into the trap that everybody has been making who want Kenny out. It was like, we've had bad results. It's like, okay, let's talk about the performance. How was the performance?
Yeah, I think you've got to be balanced. I think if in a normal world, you win a game 3-0, you move on to the next game. But I think we're judging this current Irish team over a longer period of 16, 17 games for obvious reasons. So I was absolutely delighted with the result. But then it's great that we're actually talking about some, I suppose, what you would see, some tactical errors, but also some tactical stuff that worked, because Ireland got more or less their best players on the pitch. And the manager and the coaching staff got time on the training ground to work on certain bits and pieces. So it was a mixed bag, to be honest with you. It's funny, we've dominated a lot of possession in a lot of games. I think we played better in games and not won than we played the other night. But football is a sport at the highest level is about fine margins. And a couple of things went their way in the game. Obviously, Robinson's first goal was really a great goal, brilliant bit of skill from him. The second one is a goalkeeping error. And then from there on, things went away. The penalty issue could have went either way, to be honest. Mizuno done brilliant again, but he also palmed one onto the crossbar when he should have palmed it away. And I think if it had went 2-1 with 20 minutes to go, it was a different game. And ultimately, we've run out comfortable winners. So it's what you want to be in. Talking about after a game, you know, little things that happened in the game, little fine moments, as opposed to the other noise that surrounded this team for the last 16 or 17 games.
The performance after we scored in particular, there's a massive drop off from the first 10 minutes in the after the goal to the next 15 minutes after that. What's your explanation for that?
There's a couple of things. First of all, and it's very hard for anyone to explain. No one has ever explained it to me, but there's that mindset of, I think if you're in a comfortable position, you're winning lots of games, you score the first goal and you feel you're going to get the second. There's obviously a little bit of, it's too easy to use the word lack of confidence in the group, but there is, you know, that feel we need to get that win under our belt. So that's human nature. That comes with it. There's no explanation for that. It's like teams dominate somebody for 90 minutes, score a 90-minute goal, and then the opposition have pressure for the last 5 or 6 minutes. There's no explanation for that. It's just, it's football, it's sport, it's the mindset, psychology of it all. And then the other side of it is, Azerbaijan dominated possession to a point. I mean, statistically, they over 60% of the ball against Ireland, and they had quite a lot of shots on goal. And I think... and again, it's great for me to have this debate in terms of, instead of Stephen's position this week, and maybe talk about the setup of the Ireland team. And I think we're quite open in midfield, and there was huge spaces there, and that lends itself to opposition dominating the ball against you at times if they're clever on it. So we were a little bit open in midfield with those two of Cullen and Hendrick, left us vulnerable for an opposition to keep the ball.
How do you fix that?
That was the part of the problem for me.
How would you fix that?
Well, it's difficult to fix it with your current shape. So the current shape is a 3-4-3, 3-4-2-1, whatever the different systems are. So there's been a lot of talk about, you know, Chelsea and different bits and pieces, and we've taken a bit of style from there. For me, personally, I don't think... that sort of 3-4-3 or 3, whatever, that system, it is ideal, because it allows you to get dominated either in wide areas or centrally. The difference with Chelsea is, look at their two holding midfielders at the three of them, Jorginho, Kante and Kovacic, or their two number 10s being Mount and Havertz. So we're I think a top team would have caused us problems tonight. In that central area. So that's where I would be concerned about the shape. I understand why we've gone to it, in terms of when you look at, say, someone like Shane Duffy was out of form. I think now he's playing well enough that you could have a back four and get I think we've spoken on the show about the lack of a number 10 for Ireland. I think that's part of the problem why Stephen felt he had to change the shape. But we're too open in midfield against top sides. So that would be a concern of mine. You can see why Jamie McGrath came in the second half instead of Daryl Horgan, because Jamie is that. Daryl is an out-and-out winger for me, where Jamie can play in that sort of number 10, or we call it narrow off the right position, where he gives us a little bit. He's got good feet, he can keep the ball, and that helped us at times in the second half.
Is there a sense where you're balancing the absence of that third midfielder with what that extra attacker actually gives you, Vinny? Are you looking at that front three and saying to yourself late on in the game in particular, saying, well, we wouldn't be able to create that many chances if we didn't have the three up front, and against a team like Azerbaijan, you just have to balance that with not having one of them in midfield because potentially you wouldn't need them against a team like Azerbaijan?
Yeah, exactly. So that you would say that they lacked a little bit of quality to hurt us at times. I thought Azerbaijan on the night were poor. I think they're better than they played. So, yeah, it's that balancing act. And again, you've seen it with, you see it with City. You see all of a sudden Cancelo turns up and plays in midfield when they have the ball. Every coach in the world is worried about the centre and midfield being a real danger zone for them. So it is trying to come up with those different combinations. Ireland started with Daryl Horgan sort of wide on the left and Callum Robson on the right, who had a bit of freedom. Again, there's different ways of playing that. If you go again to use Chelsea, because it seems to be brought up all the time, there's times they play Lukaku with two number 10s behind them, and then there's other times they play, in the last game they played Timo Werner up front with Lukaku and only one number 10 because they felt he could dominate. So it's all these different combinations. It's the way the modern game has gone in terms of this different systems. But I would be concerned about that system against better sides at times, because you can be dominated in midfield, albeit, you know, it probably has suited our better players, and I can see why they've gone to that system. So it's about a personal choice. I think you're vulnerable. I think you're vulnerable in that system in different areas.
You've spoken to us on the show quite a bit in the past, Vinny, about the importance of that number 10 that you talk about there in the Chelsea system. So is that as important when it comes to the number 10, the defensive capabilities of that player, the ability to track back, as it is to unlock the defence? And is that 3-4-1-2 essentially going to be the system that Stephen Kenny needs to find?
That's the point about it. It doesn't have to be a number 10. It can be effectively two number 10. So if you look at the Portugal of the game, and what Jamie McGrath did in terms of that game, and Aaron Connolly in the first half was the extra striker when he needed. They were sort of two, and he tried to do that same system the other day. I think the difficulty is so many teams have these issues. We've discussed Man United and the problem with Pogba, and then you watch Pogba last night for France, able to play as a number 8. I think you talk about we're trying to be like Chelsea at times, but they've got probably the best number 6 in the world. So all of these little things have a knock-on effect to the situation. I think when I look at this system and I say we're playing Qatar, I think Stephen will stick with this system. But against Qatar at home, for me, and I think he's always had that belief, and whatever way has changed, we don't discuss this too much, to be honest with you. He's obviously changed his opinion. I would be thinking, play 4-3-3 against Qatar and really attack them, get your fullbacks on, get your wingers on, and really dominate the side, because we're better than Qatar, so we have to be really attack-minded. I would hope he would do that. I don't think he will. If it was my job to sit beside him, again, that's what I would be saying to him, but I don't think he will. So I think we've got shortfalls in a couple of areas, and they're masking over a couple of problems, and one is definitely, you know, that real strong number 10. And sort of to, maybe a long-winded way of answering your question there, Owen, but to sum it up, when Stephen coached Dundalk, our number 10 ran more than any other player on the pitch, because, yeah, he was also the most creative, someone like Patrick McIlhenny or Robbie Benson or Richie Tell, because that was the style we wanted. We wanted our fullbacks going here, there and everywhere, but we also wanted a press from the front, something we've seen Stephen doing in his international setup as well. So it's a huge role that we haven't filled or don't look like filling anytime soon.
That midfield constellation, then, it comes down to a lack of quality at times. But three of the players that we mentioned this morning were Gavin Kilkenny, Jason Malumbi, and of course Jason Knight. Do you see any of that three making a real breakthrough and being a significant part of Kenny's midfield over the next few months?
Yeah, if we can answer that a slightly different way, we don't know, and that's the problem. Like, I looked last week and I read an article about Aaron Connolly, and I was so disappointed in it because he's 21 years of age and he could be playing for under-21s. You know, we don't know. The three of them are finding their feet. Jason Knight, Malumbi, we thought was ready to jump on and into the next stage, and hasn't worked out. It's so, so difficult at the highest level of football to break through in what is now the best league in the world. And that's where these guys are operating. So it's really, really... Connor Coventry, for argument's sake, could jump the whole lot of them. He has been outstanding for the under-21s. And we've got about four or five players in the mix here that could go to the next level. And if we get two or three of them, we're in really strong position, centre midfield. So the answer is we don't know. We've had so many sort of false dawns. What we shouldn't be doing is writing these kids off like Aaron Connolly. That's really disappointed me, the commentary around him. And I'd love to see him play on Tuesday, a bit like Callum Robinson, score a couple of goals and shut people up. So I think we've got to be patient with this team and let it develop, because so many of the players have a hell of a job just getting into their first team squads, never mind playing regular first team football.
The game against Qatar, right? It's a friendly, so we shouldn't lose sight of that. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of a crowd show up for it. Hopefully it'll be a big crowd. There's been some innovative ticketing pricing, so you hope that people will bring their kids because it's an opportunity to do that. If you're in the managerial brains trust for this game, do you pick very close to the team that finished maybe the other night, or do you give everybody who's in the squad a sniff of action and say, right, look, this is what it's going to be like? You know, you're going to have to play the same way we played, roughly, and I'm going to give you an opportunity to win a place. What do you do to try and keep everybody happy?
I think if the form of the team was much better over those last 16 games, I think you get a chance to give people some game time. I think it's slightly different now. I think the win is important. I think it's important for the team and the staff going forward. So I think you've got to strike a balance with that. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. I used Aaron Connolly as the example. Imagine Aaron Connolly scores two goals on Tuesday night. That, we're talking about that as brilliant management. We're talking about that as man management of the player. And for him, it is great for him. So I'd love to see him get an opportunity. I don't think we should dismiss people like that so easily. So it's finding that balance. And you can tell, like, going back, to answer your question, going back, you can tell he's had a week on the training ground. If you look at Shane Duffy's header that just went wide, it was from a throw-in, and it's something I found really interesting. They send Shane Duffy up for a couple of throw-ins, they go short and then put the ball in the box, and Shane Duffy is there, and you only get that with a bit of time on the training ground. So he's had some time on the training ground with the players this week, so he may want to work on bits and pieces, so therefore I think you'll get a balance. You might get five or six players with four or five coming in to freshen up the side. So I think you'll get a balance. I think he'll want to win at home. I think the crowd have been so behind the team, despite all the noise of other people. I think the crowd have been behind the team in the stadium. So Stephen will want to win that game, and I think it's important that he do as well. So I think you'll get a balance on it, and it won't be seen as a friendly in that sense.
It's going to be interesting to see. I think the critics, certainly the former players, their complaints seem to centre around results and, you know, different parts of it. There's less of the politics in their viewpoints. It's more we want the team to qualify. That's our demands. That was what we played, what was expected of us. We took the crowd given out to us when we didn't get results, and so that's what you're supposed to do. It's kind of a, I don't know, is it a belief in standards? They don't have the baggage or the connections with the setup that you're seeing from some other places. What's your take on it, and how forgiving or how important those voices will be in bringing people along as it seems like their views soften as the team starts to get results?
Yeah, I heard you discussing Richard Dunne earlier on, and I was with him yesterday. We had a game of golf that I just put on record that he cheated at, but he won by a point, and it was like something from the Olympics in terms of the scoring. But look, we had a good debate about this, and like when Stephen was first linked to the job back in the day, Richard done an article saying he should be given a chance. So these guys want the team to win. And once the team wins, they can debate then, like I have, about, you know, shapes and systems and that. And I go back to, say, Paul McGrath's comments about Ireland. Like, people think Ireland need to play a certain way. The same night Paul made his comments, and they were, like, I hear Paul and Richard, and I see exactly where they're coming from. They want the team to win. They want this style of play. But world football is changing, and at the same day Paul made them comments, I was down watching St. Pat's against Stoyer in a UEFA youth game. Pat's played exactly how a European team would play. Pat's under 19s. He played out from the back. So the kids passed from through the goalkeeper. It was possession based, etc., etc. And that's how our players are being coached now, and how they're being coached at the club. They're not being coached kick it long, rush, press, throw long balls into the box, etc., etc. So I think we've got to find that balance between the guys like the two legends of Richard and Paul wanting the team to win, and us developing a style and fixing Irish football and not bringing in an English style manager into our setup who doesn't know anything about Irish football. Because ultimately, whether people like it or not, and your social media guys will probably pick out a line I said and make a bit of an article out of it, and people will say, who's Vinnie Pertrie? He's only a League of Ireland person, etc., etc. But look at the Irish team the other night. Jamie McGrath came through the League of Ireland system. Daryl Horgan came through the League of Ireland system. Abenya came through the League of Ireland system. Bazunu came through the League of Ireland system. And there's others that I'll forget. So we need linked up and joined up thinking. That doesn't mean the manager can lose every game along the way. But we need people that are ingrained in Irish football to help improve and develop a style of play, a system, and a way to go. And ultimately, at the moment, I think Stephen is the right man for that. But he's got to keep winning games. But we've got to find a balance around the commentary and the reality of Irish football and where we found ourselves because of, you know, we all know the history of the FAI in the last 15 years. We're in a difficult position. So we've got to, these guys need to be balanced in their view. And I think they are. I think of her after, you know, watching Richard shank a few balls into the rough yesterday, we had a discussion while he was looking for his ball, and he half agreed with me on some things and I agree with him on other things. And I think there is a balance to be found, and I think it gets easier when you win matches, to be fair to these people. Win matches and then you can shut up a lot of the noise.
And did he magically find his ball after you won that argument, Vinny?
Yes, and that was that's where myself and Michael Conlon would be looking at scorecards with the same annoyance after this performance. Yeah,
Vinny, like that point you make about the League of Ireland is a really interesting one, because I sometimes think that the analysis of the debate has focused on people who are League of Ireland people and people who aren't League of Ireland people, and I think that completely misses the point about the psyche of the Irish football fan, that even people who aren't League of Ireland fans, people who don't go to games, who don't watch the league, kind of want to support the League of Ireland, kind of want to see it do well. I think it takes a strange sort of person to not want it to do well. So I genuinely believe what you're saying there about people coming through the league. I think everybody who's an Irish supporter wants to see that happen, regardless of whether or not they're a season ticket holder for a League of Ireland club.
Yeah, and I think that's the wrong narrative. I think League of Ireland people don't help it as well, because we sort of, you know, complain about people getting on the airplanes on a Saturday morning to go and watch English football. I've no issue with that. That's fine. I don't care if kids want to go over and watch Liverpool. I just hope they'd watch Dundalk, Pats, Rovers on a Friday night. But we need both. We need both. We need our players playing in England. We can't get away from that. We need some of our best young players playing in England, because that's where they get the best opportunity to develop. There's no doubt if if a young kid is playing at Man City, Man United, in terms of their coach and their setup, it's better than what we can offer in League of Ireland football. But we also need the late developers, the McGraths, the Horgans, all of these guys to come through the system as well. And under 23 football, I've watched a lot of it this year in England, the standard is quite laid back. It's different, let's just put it that way, where we have people who may have played 100, 150 first-team games at 22, 23, and they're ahead of their English counterparts at times when it comes to if you were scouting one of them players for a championship club. So we have different advantages over the English system that we have to maximise and use to our strength. And I think there just needs to be more joined-up thinking, and we need to stop. This is the problem. You're either on the English side or English Premier League debate side or League of Ireland, where there's a happy medium in the middle where we can all work together. And that's going back to a manager, where do we bring in, you know, Sam Allardyce or whatever these names that get thrown about. Eddie Howe, brilliant coach, amazing coach. But we've got, would Eddie Howe be able to just focus on the first team and forget all the other stuff? Because you can't. Now, Stephen has to also not worry too much about what's happening under 12s or 13s League of Ireland, but he has to be a presence there that gives people a boost when he turns up at these underage games or when he turns up at League of Ireland games on a Friday, and then he gets on a plane on a Saturday morning and watches his own players. And I think we've got to see that's leadership, that's setting standards, that's giving a vision for people. And I think we've got to do that, and that joined up thinking will help. And again, I keep saying that doesn't mean Stephen can afford to lose games all the time. He's got to win them on that journey as well. But I think the rewards of doing it that way will be huge. They'll be huge. And we just need that joined up thinking. And if it continues that way, because we can't rely on our players going to England anymore at 15, 16 and relying on English clubs to develop them for us. It's just not happening.
No, for sure. Vinny, great stuff this morning. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Thank you, man.
It's Vinny Parth there giving his thoughts on the weekend, and a few more 3-0 wins would be a good balm for Stephen Kenny, and it would certainly help to move the story on to what actually needs to happen in Irish football, as opposed to Kenny in, Kenny out, Kenny in, Kenny out, which is the reductionist point we're at the moment in the cycle.
It's interesting, that, like, even just getting a little bit of an insight to Richard Dunn there, and the same goes for Paul McGrath. Like, I think you're right in what you've said to Vinny there. Like, these lads just have a high standard of winning football games, and their view seems a lot more malleable than some of the really ingrained views that we're seeing here. And it's kind of, maybe I didn't expect that, and it's kind of great to see that that's open to being moved by what they see on the pitch. And that's great, and like the debate is welcomed, and it's been an interesting and difficult time for Irish football over the last year, for sure. But I think those voices are definitely more open to the idea of Stephen Kenny than maybe some people think.
All right. Yesterday on OTB, Irish skeleton racer Brendan Doyle joined Joe on OTB for a fascinating chat about his life in sport. Here's Brendan on the nuances of a sport.
No, you don't want to halt the brakes either. So the whole idea behind skeleton is build as much speed as you can. So the kind of rule of thumb is for every tenth of a second, you're faster up top. If you don't mess up, it's worth six tenths of a second down bottom. So the faster you are up top, the better. But there's so much to do on the sled. And, you know, sometimes doing nothing is right. Sometimes you have to do a lot. So it's so situational. And that's why, you know, that there's a lot of people in my sport who would be, you know, pushing the 30s and early 40s, mid 40s, because it's such an experiential sport and there's so much to it. So like other sports where I could kind of compare it to would be like, you know, mountain biking. You have to kind of get the bike to push through the corners. Surfing, you have to pump the wave. So a lot of these, like even skateboarding, like skateboarding with the way they go down a half pipe, you have to pump pressure through the corners, and you have to try to get every working for you, because we don't have that accelerator. So if we make a mistake or we break, that's just time left on the track. So
yeah, so that full interview with Brendan Doyle is available on our OTB highlights feed. You can get that on the OTB Sports app. Oh, and you were tweeting about this piece yesterday.
Yeah, on the spin-up from Kerry yesterday. This was on the radio, hadn't heard about this guy at all. Obviously really interesting stuff on his sport, and crowdfunding to actually get to the Olympic Games, the Winter Olympic Games. Was so unlucky to miss out last time. But the interview just goes down an unbelievable human story as well. A really, really hard listen, I'm sure, for plenty of people yesterday. But unbelievable bravery to tell the story. And it's just absolutely worth your time for anybody who is interested in great human stories. Brendan Doyle, worth seeking out for sure. It's on the podcast feed now.
All right, 5 minutes past nine this morning. I'm delighted to say Alan Quinlan is with us. Alan, good morning to you. How are you?
Morning, lads. How are you? Good, thanks.
The front page of the Examiner is very concerned about the injury to RG Snyman. It looks like, we don't know obviously yet, but the concerns are that it might be a serious injury.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the biggest fear for everybody involved in Munster rugby or support Munster. I think it's just hard to believe it, really, isn't it? He went up for a kickoff, just came down, and there was no real collision in any way. I watched it back a good few times, and unfortunately, something is wrong with his knee, RG Snyman's knee, and it's the same leg. And it's just hard to believe it's happened to him again. You know, he's had a dreadful run of luck, and it's a massive blow to him, a huge blow. Given he got injured in that first game against Leinster, then got burnt in that fire pit incident, and they've kind of slowly coaxed him back into the team in the last couple of weeks, and he's a game changer, you know. And it looks like it's not a good situation for him now, and it's incredibly unlucky for him and for Munster.
And the response in Thomond when he came off the bench last week, Alan, as well, it was kind of more than just the player that he is and what he brings to the proceedings. It was this massive energy boost within the whole stadium, it seemed.
Yeah, but I think it's very understandable, Owen, that people are going to be excited. When RG Snyman and Damien Dialinde were announced about 2 years ago, was it, I think, and they were going to come at the start of the following season, I think everybody was excited and really happy about that. You know, these guys have just won a World Cup. Snyman had shown, even though he was more of coming off the bench for South Africa that World Cup and in previous test matches, the devastation, the type of player he is, his ball-carrying ability, and what he could bring at this level here. I think he would have been, you know, as I said, made a huge impact with Munster. But I don't know, it's just sometimes, and my own history with Munster, when you think back to Christian Cullum, you sign a player at that level and you think you're as players, we were really excited at the time Christian Cullum came, and just everything went wrong with his shoulders. Everything that could go wrong went wrong, and we only saw small glimpses of what he could do and what he could bring. And I remember thinking the guy was just so unlucky. And Tyler Blaindell is someone who probably comes to mind as well, that just with his neck and continuously setbacks around there. And you know, I often looked at other guys in my own career when I had some of my own serious injuries and thought, God, why does it have to be me all the time? And sometimes there's just no explanation. And the only thing that's on RG Snyman's side is he's still young. And he wasn't rushed back here either, you know. That's you know, because of what happened with the fire pit incident, he actually got more time to kind of strengthen up and recover and get stronger and fitter and stuff. So sometimes there's no explanation for these things, but you just think, like, there was no contact in that situation yesterday. He just went up, jumped in the air, caught the kickoff, came down on his leg, and he's something went wrong with his knee. So look, who knows when the scan is done today? Hopefully it's not as bad as people fear. And I think, you know, Munster themselves came out and said that it just doesn't look good, does it?
No.
You know, he knew straight away. And if you kind of, he didn't move, he was in distress straight away. So I think we can all assume that it is the worst, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, it's horrible news for him, and really takes the gloss off what was an excellent performance from...
And Joe, if I could just say, you know, for him as a player, you know, some of these players, obviously, sometimes we over the years, we've maybe questioned one or two foreigners, their motivation, desire gets questioned a lot in France, and thankfully in Ireland we've been very, very lucky in all the provinces with overseas players coming in and the impact they make, and I think they buy into the culture pretty quickly, and they want to try and reward the fans, if you like, and the support they get. And from what I was hearing, R.G. Snyman was really upset and frustrated last year that he couldn't kind of reward the Munster fans and get out there and play. And, you know, the last couple of weeks, he was just so excited and delighted. You saw his reaction scoring that try. And for this fella, as an individual, it's heartbreaking for the individual himself. You know, he lost his mother there very, very recently in South Africa as well. So it's heartbreaking stuff for him personally.
Well, we wish him all the best in his recovery as well. To move back to the actual playing and the match itself, the performance of Ben Healy was so good that people are now wondering if that debate that we kind of had a little bit a couple of weeks ago is actually a full-blown debate now. Is Healy, okay, not to over-egg a league match at this time of the season, but his performances at the moment are certainly nipping at the heels of Joey Carberry, if not right there beside him.
Yeah, what we saw yesterday was a step up. Back to the same venue nearly 12 months ago when we saw that, when he kind of announced himself to everyone, really, with that winning kick and that performance in Scarlets a year ago. He was very composed yesterday. His passing was good. A couple of great passes for a couple of tries. Looked very assured and in the position. And yeah, I think he certainly has increased that debate around challenging Joey Carberry for that 10 jersey. And maybe, you know, I don't know. I still have massive faith in Joey Carberry, what he can do and the talent he has. He just hasn't kind of got back his spark from where he was pre the ankle injury. You know, I think that will come. That will come. I think maybe you could play Joey Carberry full back. Maybe you could just give him a little bit of freedom to say, look, do this natural, unstructured stuff that when the ball is kicked down to you, that is ingrained in you, and it's what's made you so exciting, and take away some of that big decision making from him. I don't know if that will happen, but look, I still think Joey Carberry is a super player, and he will come back. But having that little bit of depth there, and the option of having Ben Healy on the field, you can imagine a tight European game away from home. Your score 2 points down and having him on the field anywhere from the halfway, even outside the halfway line, he's a potential match winner for you with a kick. So, you know, it is early days, and Scarlets were dreadful. Munster were brilliant. And there's no point in getting too carried away, but I was very impressed. And I think he looked comfortable and he looked happy in himself and confidence, and that's what you want from young players. But his forwards in front of him were exceptional, and you know, you get good delivery like that.
Does he have to get some game time with Ireland sooner rather than later, just to see? Like, is he? What if
he probably needs to back up some of these performances, and you know, Connacht next. I don't know, is he going to start again? It depends on selections and all that kind of
stuff. Okay, who would you pick for Connacht?
I don't know. It depends on I think Joey Carberry has to get games, and I think he's the one that's in control. I think what Ben Healy is, you know, did yesterday will be banked, and it will take his confidence to another level. But we have to try and get that level of performance out of Joey Carberry. So I think you have to play Joey Carberry. You don't start. The worst thing that can happen now is that you start messing around with. And Joey Carberry sitting on the bench, because I think that will have a real negative effect on his confidence. Sometimes it can spark a guy to really be determined to get back on track, but it's not as if Joey Carberry is playing really badly. He's just not shown that spark that we normally associate him with. And, you know, let's see what happens against Connacht. But we need to see a performance from Joey Carberry. Then you're in a great place where you're two, kind of one and two are in good mood, playing well, controlling games. But I suspect it'll be a different challenge next week against Connacht, given what happened them against the Bulls and some similarities last year when they shipped 50 points by Leinster in the Rainbow Cup. They came to Munster the following week and they beat Munster. So that's going to be a different story and a lot more challenging. But everything that happened yesterday for Munster just it stuck. They created their own luck. Their intensity and energy was phenomenal. My own son asked me yesterday before the game, will Munster win today? As a 12-year-old does, you have to give a very straight answer, yes or no. He doesn't want this big description. And I said, I'm not sure. I think this is going to be a really difficult one for them. And I think Scarlets might beat them because they have all their Welsh internationals. They have their Lions players back. And Munster have made 11 changes. And I think it's a difficult place to go.
You gave him a long-winded answer anyway, it turns out.
I know. He wanted the yes or no. And I gave him the long-winded answer. Yeah, you're very sharp turned away. You can pick that up straight away. But anyway, basically, I said Scarlets will probably win. And we were shocked. I just thought there's a couple of guys as well. You know, Finian Witcherly for me now, and maybe given what's happened, what potentially could be the case with RG Snyman, I thought he showed a physicality, a maturity, and a real kind of presence about himself. There was a couple of performances there yesterday that meant that that's brilliant for those players because they've kind of stepped up to another level. Look, it's only round three, but yeah. I think it's not getting too carried away, but there were some great performances. Neil Cronin, you know, brilliant as well at scrum half. So you could name all the players. Thomas Ahern, his potential, and I've spoken about that before. But right across the board, I think they were brilliant. And what it actually is good for is a feel-good factor throughout the camp because everybody else expected them to lose that game yesterday.
Ahern gets loads more game time this year now as a result of what happens with Snyman, but actually, you know, in his position, coming off the bench is probably exactly where he needs to be as opposed to starting a load of games. So it's a double-edged sword. Those extra minutes are great for him and for his experience, but actually sometimes you don't want to risk the physical issue or any of the stuff that comes from being 21, 22. Like, if you look back on James Ryan, played really early in his career and then had injury problems for 2 years afterwards. That's not to say he wouldn't have those injury problems anyway, but got a lot of game time very early. And sometimes in the second row, it's better if you're Finian Witcherly and a little bit older. When you are bursting into the team, you know, you're more fully formed and you're ready for it. Just to go back to the... We expected an out-half controversy because that's kind of one of the meat and drink of Irish rugby. But actually, at the moment, there's no out-half controversy. The number 10 for Ireland is Johnny Sexton because he's playing pretty well and he's fit and he's got that chip on his shoulder from the Lions. And it's kind of an ideal case scenario for the Ireland coach at the moment because you've got somebody who's in possession and if anybody's going to take it off him, they're going to have to play really well as opposed to just getting it because Sexton's hit the end of his career.
Yeah, he was really good when he came on against Zebra. Again, you've got to put the opposition in perspective. But I think he looks in great shape. And it doesn't surprise me that, you know, I always notice from my own experience as well, when you get a good pre-season under your belt, you get the niggles, the bangs and the knocks sorted out and you get time to really recover and replenish your body, if you like. It gives you a real boost for pre-season yourself. So I think he looks so strong and fit and sharp. But you know, the debate will go on. If Johnny Sexton plays well in matches, people will say he's going to go on forever. If he has one bad game, people are going to say he's finished. So that's what he's going to have to carry now for the next year. And it depends what happens, obviously, at the end of the season. We shouldn't be retiring a guy because of age. I think it's some people are kind of freakish in the way they look after themselves and it's down to desire and commitment and all that stuff. So he seems to have plenty of that and he's spoken about it. He's dealt with a lot of elation and success in over his career and probably in the last couple of years have been the toughest ones because you get questioned a lot. Ireland have struggled. So on occasion, so he's going to encounter that throughout the season, and he's not silly enough to get carried away and think, oh, "Well, I've got man of the match against Zebra here. I've come off the bench, and people are talking about me again." So, but the reality is, he still does everything better than the pretenders to the crown, if you like, and the fly halves below him, and. He has that maturity, obviously, through experience, but he's a top-class player. So I still think he can have a massive season for Leinster in Ireland, and it was great to see him kind of in full flow at the weekend.
It's almost as if his grip on the 10 jersey for Ireland is stronger now than it was during the Six Nations. But what's encouraging, Alan, is that there are legitimate reasons for hope, whether it's the pandemic layoff, which I'm sure would have done him no harm whatsoever, and having this summer off. It's not like he's come out of nowhere and is putting a run of form together. We kind of know why. It's because he's rested up and he's got time off at a really important era in his career, I guess.
Yeah, he would. I met him once or twice in over the summer, just out and about in the parks and things. And you don't want to start asking loads of questions. You just say, "How are you?" And I met him, and I think anyone who knows him would say that he would have been very frustrated and disappointed with the Lions situation. But that rest—it's not alone a physical rest, though, and it's a mental rest as well. So he's got to try and enjoy his rugby and not look too far ahead. And I think that's something you hear a lot from athletes in the latter parts of their career. Just it can be boring sometimes, but try and live in the here and now and not get too high or elated or low if disappointments happen. But he's just got to try and do the job to the best of his ability. But he's, as I said, he hasn't lost, you know, and you don't lose your talent the older you get. You lose the speed, it's all in the speed in your legs and stuff like that. So if he can keep those things high, he can have a big season for Leinster and Ireland. But I think Andy Farrell and Leo Cullen, they both have to be mindful that, you know, if he didn't play with Leinster, who are the backup players and are they up to speed? Have they got game time? So it's about managing his minutes as well. But it looks like he still is the number one and will be the number one for November and Six Nations.
We're out of time, but we'll talk a bit more about obviously Connacht ahead of the Munster game this weekend. They were very disappointed with their performance. Listening to Andy Friend speaking to Joe, he reckons that the players were a bit fatigued. They did a bit too much during the week, so hopefully they'll get that right and we'll see a bit of a cracker next weekend at home. And Alan, good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us.
Cheers, lads. Thanks.
Alan Quillen giving us his thoughts there on the Orgy Snyman situation, the 10 situation evolving across the provinces and a bit more as well. OTBAM brought to you by Gillette. Good mornings. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Here's what we got coming up on OTB Sports Radio today at 1 o'clock. It's Michael Conlon talking to us after his Rio exit. That's OTB Gold. State of the Union at 3 o'clock. Our rugby show, Keith Wood. The split season, the club football documentary. OTB Gold tonight at 6 is Sonia O'Sullivan and the show with Joe and the rest from 7 this evening live, looking back at a pretty decent weekend of sport. We didn't mention the France-Spain game, another tournament win for France. The Nations League was pretty good.
The Nations League has been good. It's better, I guess, for the neutral observer than meaningless qualifiers or friendlies, really. And I think even over the last... The first two renewals of it, it's kind of produced a bit of drama at the end.
Those semi-finals were excellent. Final was excellent last night. They clearly meant something. They picked their best teams. They want to win.
Absolutely. And there is also kind of a bit of a foreshadowing to what will happen next year. Like, there's maybe a sense that Spain were a little bit out of luck in the way they crashed out of the Euros this year. But, I mean, I think on our show, we've predicted Spain to win every tournament since the dawn of time. But maybe next year is actually... that year, and some of the kids they have obviously are absolutely sensational, and it's a pretty exciting time.
Up next this morning on OTBAM, we're talking about the NAIS Galco Duathlon, which some members of Team OTB completed.
OTB AM.
Now, in case you haven't heard already, yesterday Team OTB completed the NAIS Galco Duathlon. It was all thanks to Whoop, the digital fitness and health coach that provides personalised sleep recovery and training insights. Check out whoop.com for more details. And I'm delighted to say that we have Aisling Riley with us and also Tommy Rooney. It's a Meath love-in. Aisling, you weren't there, but you had a good reason for it. You actually had a proper, valid excuse.
Yeah, well, I had a game, but I was really raging that I couldn't be there just after doing all the training and getting ready for it. So delighted for you, delighted that you got through it. But yeah, I had a game, I had a championship game, and we won the quarterfinal yesterday. So we're through to the semi now in 2 weeks. So yeah, had a valid excuse.
How much of a decision did you have to weigh up, Aisling? Did you come close to telling your teammates, listen, there are more important things at hand here and I'm off to NAIS instead?
Well, see, we got fixtures a while ago and I knew it was going to be this date, but I was doing everything in my power to get this game changed, trying to get it the day before. So the whole club was trying to get this game changed. And I was telling them, I have to do this duathlon. So we were trying for ages. So everyone knew all about this duathlon. And then it just came down to like a day before, whenever they were like, look, we tried everything. They're not playing ball, the other team. They're not going to change. So that's the way it is. So when it came down to it, I was never going to miss my championship game. No chance, to be honest. I would have been told to not come back, I think, if I didn't go. So, yeah, I made the right choice.
Tommy, anything you wanted
she
to
did.
Go on?
Well, Ashton clearly made the right choice because she would have shown us all up, Jerry, yesterday. I don't know. We'll probably show it in a few minutes. If anyone has nailed Whoop over the last couple of weeks, it's Aisling. Her sleep performance is like 100% every week. She's had one red. She's been in the red once in terms of recovery over the last few weeks. She's probably done more training than most of us in terms of her strain playing camogie and football. I actually can't get my head around how it's that much better than ours would be. But listen, Jer, yesterday we turned up. Me and you turned up and we got the job done. So I'm very proud of that. We came through that yesterday.
Yeah. I finished last, officially. Last of the finishers. As I said earlier on, they were actually de-rigging the whole event by the time I got there. Somebody had helpfully moved my bike from the transition area to like the side where, you know, it wouldn't be in the way anymore as they cleaned up. There were the litter pickers going around picking up the litter as I stumbled over the line eventually. But you know what? It's like...
You did it.
Yeah. In the immortal words, to completely butcher it, we're not here to... take over. We are definitely here to take part.
With a national meeting yesterday, Jer, like, these are people that train for duathlons and triathlons all the time. So I'm not sure if you expect to finish in the top 80 or the top 100. I think it was pretty impressive to get the job done.
I thought there would be like families and relays and, you know, some of my colleagues.
Yeah, well,
who I could at least target. Like I figured I would have been able to take Nathan and or Adrian Barry. That's all I needed. Yeah. But turns out that wasn't possible.
Yeah, but for next year, we'll see what the lads can get up to next year.
Yeah, you showed up. That is the main thing.
Yeah, exactly.
As I keep saying, the best ability is availability. So Tommy, talk to us a little bit about at one point afterwards, in the immediate aftermath, you said, "Whoop got me through this."
Well, the reason I said that is that I've, like, very frustratingly been struggling with bloody injuries all year. And, well, not all year, since the first 5 minutes of our first championship game this year. So I wasn't able to do a huge amount of training that I usually do. And you were just able to see with your Whoop what day you shouldn't push it, what day you shouldn't go out and go hard. And I was able to get out last Monday and I did pretty much half of it. I did a 10K cycle and a 3K run. And I knew I could do it on the Monday. I wanted to do it on the Sunday and my recovery was like so bad. I was like, God, there's no point going out here. I'm going to get injured. And I knew I needed to get a little bit done last Thursday and Friday, but I couldn't do too much. So I mowed the lawn up in Schieffer's granddad's house and it actually came up my Whoop as a bit of active recovery. So that worked. And I just needed to get myself to the day and get through. Like, everyone's preparation is different, whether it be for a championship match or for a race or something like this. And it's about understanding your own body and being able to get through it. Mm-hmm. I can see now today, I'm after getting a health warning on my Whoop that my my resting heart rate is elevated. So I've either drank a lot of alcohol, which I didn't last night, that I've got an illness, or that I went way over the top with my work. So it's just recommended that I take it easy today, which I fully intend on doing. But then I think it's important to get back out and get something done the day afterwards. Like, so it, okay, Whoop definitely got me through it, because I might have been a little silly and gone out and tried to push myself, because I did feel a little nervous going into it that I mightn't actually finish it, because I hadn't done a huge amount in the last couple of weeks.
That's my strain. I've just handed on
It's like a chart and everything's at 10 and then there's one day where it's at 21. It like completely dwarfs the other day. What does that mean? Explain this to me.
That's the hard work that you did. It was like, no hard work, no hard work, no hard work. Almost no work at all. And then, oh my God, what have you done?
That's your strain on screen yesterday, yeah. And can you see when you click on the actual activity what your heart rate was like for the whole thing?
Yeah,
my anaerobic training, I spent 31 minutes at 90 to 100% of my max heart rate. Do you know, like, there's times when you're on the bike going up hills around Blessington that you're just, how on earth? We passed each other where I was, now I got overtaken by everybody on the bike. Like the behind the scenes video of this is going to be hilarious because myself and Jer passed each other on the, we bought a GoPros fitted to each other. I was coming up the hill at Blessington. I have no idea how I got up it. And Jer was about to descend it. I knew he had another maybe 12 kilometers to go on the cycle. I had probably 8 to go. And I was just thinking, I chided you on, Jer, but I was like, if you can just get up that hill, you'll make it home.
And it was the unknown unknown that where you're definitely thinking, okay, I said this a little bit earlier on and I'm not ashamed to admit it. I was lying on Twitter last night when I said I was willing a puncture. I was actively thinking about faking one and getting off the bike and just pressing the little button to let all the air out of my tire and going, oh, look, look, I mean, I tried my best with nothing I could do. I was definitely going to make it. But I didn't, and I'm proud of that fact. But it's like, how much further do we have to go? The only indication I had was the amount of time that there was on the GoPro camera. It was like, this is going to take 55 minutes roughly. It ended up taking 47, and it was heartbreaking to look down and go, minute 3, and then 15 minutes would pass, minute 4. Like, oh my God, this is actually heartbreaking. But we made it in the end.
The numbers, the speed that some of the cyclists do is absolutely outrageous. Like the winner yesterday did it in 51 minutes. And I think...
Wow.
The whole thing. The
51 minutes. Like I walked by a couple of lads when I was checking my bag.
About that.
Yeah, I know. It's absolutely outrageous. It's my first...
Was the hill way worse than you expected?
Ah, Jesus, there was about 4 hills, like. And it was a joke.
Oh,
like.
God.
Yeah, but like one of I the best things for me... There was like these Triathlon Ireland... members that were maybe, you know, involved in maybe making sure you went the right way, or they were on the roads maybe giving little shouts of encouragement. And it was near enough the end and there weren't that many people around me at this stage and in the cycle and coming up to Big Hill, one of these Team Ireland, or sorry, Triathlon Ireland members just gave me a little boost. Go on, activate the glutes now going up the hill. Go on, you're doing great. And it actually gave me a good boost and I got up and I got through that last bit of the cycle. So fair play to them. It was an incredibly well-run event and it was very enjoyable, Jared. Like, I know it was tough during it and you're working, but when you get through it, it's well worth it.
It really is. The adrenaline afterwards didn't leave until about 2:30 this morning and that's why, that's actually why I'm so exhausted. I just couldn't sleep at all. So average heart rate was 156. Max heart rate was 180 and it said you spent 26 minutes at 90 to 100% of your max HR.
Hey, that just shows that you can do a bit more hard work, Jer, because, you know, I'm a couple of minutes more than you, so you just got to push that on a bit more and we'll get there. I think we should have a look at Aisling's stats for the last couple of days, because this is just a perfect example of how you can peak for championship. Aisling had 2 championship games this weekend, Camogie and football, and I think, I don't know if we have them there, but her sleep performance is like 99.
Holy moly.
Recovery's in the green every day. Her strain was perfect. Like, how did you play in the matches? Did you feel like you were ready to go?
I did actually feel like I was ready to go, and I haven't felt that in a few years because balancing the football Camogie, we're practically the same team and we all say to each other, geez, I'm wrecked going out here. God, we didn't get enough recovery, and we're just always the same record over and over again. And I've been watching my Whoop and it's saying, don't go over 14 today, you know, because I did stuff the day before. So only go a 14 strain and you'll have time to recover overnight. So I always watch that, which I never had before. So that really helped me. So I never would go over. And then the next day I'd have training again. So I'd look again at what it would tell me. And I just maybe didn't push myself in every single training. But then I would perform, I suppose. And I did feel good in the games. I only got a 14 in the game yesterday, which I was very annoyed at. I came off going, hold on.
Were you corner forward?
Yeah, I was corner forward.
There you go.
Look, but I came out. I had to get into the backs. We were winning, so we had to block it up. But so I don't know what that was about. I was thinking, geez, maybe I should have done more there. But no, I felt like when I came off, I did enough. So yeah, it was good. Good to get the win.
Hold on. Good weekend for a tote.
Yes, it was. Yeah, the lads got the win too. So they're into the semi now, same weekend, 2 weeks' time.
Jerry, you better stop us. You better stop us before we get talking meat football here for another 10 minutes.
I mean, I realised that we were talking about, a global health coach app that suddenly became a local Ratope. Oh, we're listening to LMFM.
Yeah, the whole Ratope's listening in. They know that I'm talking about this game, so they're all like, what time's it at? We'll tune in.
Great.
They're all here.
And literally everybody else switched off. that's interesting that the strain in the matches wasn't absolutely ridiculous. Your heart rate there was 69, which suggests that there's a a general base level of fitness, which I think the other thing that happens is you start using the diary system on this, and then it's like it asks you every day, did you do this, did you do this, did you do this, and you're like, it's a little reminder for what you should be doing and what you shouldn't be doing. As you slide the little container over, it's like, yeah, I did have that many drinks, and maybe I should so one other bit of advice for anybody ever doing a triathlon: don't go out on the Friday night before it's on the Sunday. That's a bad idea. I mean, I just had to. There was a thing on that I couldn't miss. And
wow, fair play.
No, not fair play. It's a bad idea. This is not
rock
something,
and roll.
Not something.
You got through it and you got to go out.
Yeah, and
it
look,
is rock and roll.
I see there's no Adrian Barry and there's no Nathan Murphy here. And Owen, you've been pretty quiet through this whole thing.
You know, at least
you didn't commit.
At least if you're going to commit, do it. And if you're not going to do it, don't commit. So I knew I wasn't going to do it, so I didn't commit.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
What?
So
I'm pretty happy with my decision. Congratulations on your wins, Ashling. Congratulations, Tommy.
Succeed.
And congratulations, Ger.
Never try again.
You guys.
Simpson.
Can we also, never try
can
again.
We also put it on the record that I've usurped Shane Hannan this year as well?
Oh, yeah.
Never turned up. There you go, Hannan.
I think Hannah was doing something else. That
we'll
have to get his stats.
I still plan to do it and time it myself. So I'll let you know, Tommy.
That's a look with that.
My money's on you, Ashling. Right, good stuff. That is this year's duathlon. And Owen, are you going to do next year's? I mean, come on.
Yeah, why not?
Joe Malloy agreed to do it yesterday.
Forget about this and not do it.
So Joe Malloy agreed to do it next year as well, did he?
Pretty sure Joe agreed live on air yesterday, yeah.
Okay, well then we'll have teams. That's perfect. So Team OTB, that was the NACE Galco Duathlon. It was all thanks to Whoop, the digital fitness and health coach that provides personalised sleep recovery and training insights. And the more you live with it, the better the insights become, because you kind of understand exactly what it means for your body and stuff. So check out whoop.com for more details. And definitely worthwhile. OTBAM brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Join us tomorrow morning from 7:30.
OTB AM. With Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.